I will call the meeting to order. This is not an official meeting in the sense that we're taking minutes and recording everything as usual, but it is, I would say, the most important education meeting that we have had so far this session, because it is Senate, House, Commissioner Alice Segrin, Education Minnesota President Tom Dewar, and all the stakeholders who have been invited, and it looks like we have standing room only, who are here in this room to see how we can come together on our application for Race to the Top, which some say is a long shot. You know, we are all elected officials. We're competitive. We always think we can win. But the main way to win, no matter what, is if we come together on behalf of what is really good for our students and closing the achievement gap, having all students have good teachers and succeed and use research and not just whims of whatever anyone is asking us to do, including the federal government, that none of us think have all the answers in the world for everything. So I'll ask Senator Stump to make a statement of welcome as well on behalf of the Senate, and then I'll lay out the agenda and we'll get started. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the invitation to be over here in the House. We don't have this big of a room over in the Capitol, so we appreciate your hospitality. The only thought I have is that I wish this would be maybe March 20th instead of April 20th, because I know there's a lot of things that need to be done, and we have very little time, but sometimes we act better under pressure than we make more efficient use of our time anyway. So I'm optimistic. I think our Senate colleagues are very encouraged about the challenges that we face, and we definitely look forward to working with the House and the Department and Education Minnesota and trying to put together a very meaningful future for educational changes. And this is actually my 30th year in the legislature, and I've seen a lot of proposals come and go. Some of them were just ideas that influential people had, and they brought them to the legislature and got them enacted, and in a matter of a number of years later, there was a new idea. And so I'm a little bit apprehensive, a little bit cautious when it comes to a lot of change, because I know the real work is done between the teacher and those students. And I think the perspective the Senate would like to offer is that what's good for the teacher and the student and that student's education is really how we should govern the types of changes that we make. And so that's kind of the perspective that we'd like to offer, and look forward to working with all of our partners.
Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. It's good to be with all of you, and I'm going to keep my remarks short. I'm very excited about this opportunity to have input today. Our plan is to work with as many stakeholders as possible to review our original application, to see how we can improve it. We know that we need to have a number of points made up that we did not get credit for. We're going to be working hard. We know we have to be bolder. We have to be more powerful in our statements. We know that's going to take a lot of hard work. I have asked the representative and senator about considering a timeline that by May 1st we have any legislation that we consider passed. because the application is due June 1st. That means we have to really start writing our application really even today as we speak. And we also, if we have significant changes in our application, we also need to go out then to our school districts and explain what our new application will say, because part of the criteria is to get the support of your school districts. And so that took us about 3 weeks the last time. So as you know, we really need to have decisions made so that we can do that kind of work and then get back so we can submit our application by June 1st. So all of us are going to have to roll up our sleeves. I hope that we can work together in a positive way. I have faith that we will be doing that, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be spending all day with President Dewar and Representative Greiling and Senator Stumpf and a few other legislators. The U.S. Department of Education is coming in to Minneapolis and have invited all states to come and hear the presentation of Tennessee and Delaware, the winning states, and see what we can learn from them. And then President Dewar and I have committed to an all-day meeting on Thursday. We're going to be working together, especially reflecting on what we hear today, what we hear tomorrow, and we're going to again try to work very diligently and try to come up with some proposals that will be exciting and reform-minded for the state of Minnesota. So we're excited about this week. It's going to be a fast and busy week for us, but you have my commitment that we'll work really hard to get the job done.
Thank you, Commissioner Segrin. And I do believe if we do decide, as we lay cards on the table today and get input from this group for the meeting that some of us will be at tomorrow with the Department of Education, that if there's a will, I think we can find a way, because this is not our first meeting. We did have hearings in December and January in the House, and I know that the Senate did as well. Many of us went to most, if not all, of the meetings that the department had as they worked up their first application. We did ask at various times if there was any legislation that we did need to pass, and previously we've always been told no, we didn't have to do any legislative changes. So now we, you know, now that we didn't get our application, we are looking at legislative changes. So we have this kind of a time crunch here, but I will just emphasize that I think it's more important that we do things right for our children, and then we're winners whether we get the race to the top money or not. And so thank you for all your help as we assess what we should do. And this is a breakthrough meeting, I think, when we can do that. The first thing, we want to honor the work of Representative Carlos Mariani, the House Education Policy Chair, and Senator Terry Bonoff, who led the effort to start working on some of these issues for the Senate, and many senators, and she may name them, but they kind of got the ball rolling a week or two ago as a precursor to this meeting to do some of the spade work. So I'd like to call on each of them just to make some opening comments and put this discussion into the legislative frame. We're going to hear then from staff to run through the governor's proposal, which is the governor's frame, and then we will look at the two frames and some of the issues that are major sticking points or major important points that we need to have a lot of discussion of and kind of flesh them out and see what they mean to various people and how would they address our students' learning and the achievement gap. And we have a very condensed, because we're short of time, agenda where we picked just three topics: alternative teacher licensure, the value-added growth model that we've all come to believe in, but it might mean different things to different people. And we have Dr. Misty Sato from the university to help us with that. And then Susan Hegard from the Bush Foundation to talk about what they're doing with the colleges and universities in our state with a $40 million grant from Bush to help revolutionize how we train teachers in the colleges and universities. And then from the agenda, you can see we have a lot of people who would like to testify at the end. So we have an ambitious agenda. When we planned this, the House had a 10 a.m. floor session. Now we don't. So we do have the luxury of being able to go up to 11 a.m. 11 a.m., and then I think the Senate has some commitments. So with that, we'll start with Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, and good morning, members. I actually was up to midnight writing out my thoughts here because I thought we're going to be covering a lot. It might be quicker for me to actually read these thoughts for you. Let me just say that in terms of race to the top, it occurs to me that what the federal government is looking for from states isn't so much a grab bag of good ideas or an expression of goodwill. It seems to me that what the federal government is looking for from states is a cohesive framework of good ideas that are meant to leverage one another. Let me just say that I believe our state is a state of good ideas. I think the challenge before us is how do we knit that together into a much more cohesive and comprehensive reform agenda. Madam Chair, members, many of you know that I sent a letter of support. I'm obviously not reading my script. I sent a letter of support to the Department of Education for their first proposal, Race to the Top. I felt that Race to the Top offered us a reasonable set of expectations across a diverse group of educators and community members in our state, and I sat in those stakeholder groups to be able to fashion a cohesive reform agenda consistent with the criteria of the federal government. I also felt that Minnesota, in fact, had a strong case to make in terms of good reform efforts over the years and in fact, a lot of good ideas. Among those, the use of the alternative teacher compensation, or commonly known as QCOMP, that exists in our state, the statutory move toward using multiple measures approach in assessing schools, our recent comprehensive overhaul of charter school governance statutes, the statutory passage of teacher-led self-governed schools, and the adoption of a growth measured rubric to assess school and eventually student performance. We also have moved most recently to focus with the leadership of Representative Kath on work reflection-based teacher professional development approaches. And then we've also made strong moves in adopting computer adaptive testing tools as a primary tool for an assessment tool. When you add all those things to the revision of our academic standards, which have produced some, I would argue, some of the highest rigor expectations across the nation, including the expectation that our eighth graders be proficient and competent in algebra, we felt that Minnesota deserved the Race to the Top stimulus fund investment to continue our path toward a smart and modern K-12 system. And although we did not update our alternative teacher license statute, as you all know, there is strong interest that frankly cuts across many sectors and frankly cuts across political communities in this state for a responsible, aggressive, reliable alternative teacher pathways for teacher candidates. We have heard consistently strong desire for such a development in our state from our communities of color, which are precisely the communities that our education system is not doing, very politely said, not doing a very good job with. My concerns with the last application centered more on the uncertainties surrounding the executive branch's potential ability, this is important as legislators, the executive branch's potential ability to unilaterally counter legislative intent as reflected in statute related to a number of issues involving teacher rights, the intent of QCOMP, and the adoption of national standards. I also felt that the proposal needed to be, as I alluded to earlier, more blunt in addressing the racial inequalities in academic performance outcomes. However, I thought that the proposal deserved support, again, as I saw that RTT really set a possibility for us to move forward with reform efforts. I've had the privilege of the last several months of working with Senator Bonhoeff, and she's going to comment quickly here. Hopefully quickly here.
And excuse me, Representative Mariani, one thing I forgot to do, and I should do if I could do it, so to be polite to both you and Senator Bonhoeff, I'm going to give the people in the House know that we like to end at 11 if we say 11, so I'm just going to run through what I have proposed so you know all, everybody knows how much time they have. Between Representative Mariani and Senator Bonhoff, I'm planning to end that section at 9, hopefully. 15 minutes to go over the governor's bill and hear from the governor. Half an hour each for the three main topics on the agenda, because that's what we really want to talk about. And then we have 2 minutes each for each testifier. So we need to keep on schedule if we're going to have the full time for the three important points and if we want to honor our testifiers. So, Representative Mariani, you and Representative Bonhoff have until 9 o'clock. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, you just used about 2 minutes of our time here.
Maybe 9:02.
Senator Bonhoff and I have met, and of course we're looking at the four quality assurance areas that you're familiar with: standards and assessments, data systems, great teachers and leaders, and turning around low achieving school, which are the quality assurance areas of the race to the top. We believe the biggest challenge to states, including ours, is the one that the National Council on Teacher Quality calls the make or break area, due to the 138 points out of a 500 point maximum that can be attributed to a proposal related to the great teachers and leaders area. This area seeks to improve education by advancing the quality of teacher and school leadership. Race to the Top proposes, this is important, members, I think this gets right to the rub of the issue. Race to the Top proposes that we rigorously evaluate teachers and principals, use those evaluations to inform how we prepare, how we license, how we professionally develop, how we place in high minority and high poverty schools, how we pay, and how we determine the terms of employment of all teachers and principals. Race to the Top proposes that the evaluation be based on, in part, another key point here, members, in part based on the measures of student academic growth. And later on, we're going to hear pros and cons of different approaches to that. We asked our staff to put together a list of elements already existing in Minnesota statutes related to measures of student growth and teacher quality to see if those were elements that we can build off of that possibly were missed in the first proposal. For student growth, Minnesota measures include the use of locally administered formative assessments like the NWEAs, response to intervention, rigorous course taking, including AP, IB, concurrent enrollment, and PSEO, and measures of student engagement and connection at schools. For teacher quality, Minnesota measures include national board certification, teacher professional reflection, teacher work samples. Actually, some of these are proposed. Teacher work samples or performance assessments that are currently being developed by the Board of Teaching. And, of course, the teacher licensure requirement issue that I raised earlier. Clearly, members, Minnesota has a strong policy direction that's focused on expecting stronger pedagogy from its teaching force and trying to do that in a way that invites ownership by teachers and principals. However, I believe the critical question posed by RTT is this. Given that we have, indeed, persistently differentiated, tragic, adverse academic outcomes characterized by race and income, should we adopt the approach advanced by the U.S. Department of Ed that identifies the need to aggressively line up and the development, employment, and evaluation of educators in ways that we're currently not doing, and to do so with high-stakes consequences, frankly, for our teachers and principals? Now, members, ownership by teachers may be something that's valued by the federal government, but I would say that it's an issue that is not allowed to trump the federal government's expectation that we set up an aggressive evaluation and accountability system. I don't believe, Madam Chair, and I'll close here, I don't believe that contrary to the governor's recent political rhetoric, that Minnesota's legislators are not up to the task of pushing hard to develop an aggressive policy frame governing the professional status of teachers. We know that teachers are the most important in-school variable influencing student performance, and as such, we owe it to our young to ensure that they have the best instructors working with them. We need, however, strong research-supported metrics to determine, and we're going to talk about this, Madam Chair, and the rest of this hearing, strong research-supported metrics to determine who those best instructors are and how to keep, promote, and further develop their schools. I believe, members, that Minnesota's struggle in large part really is a cultural one. We are a state that have vested strong decision-making in local authorities, school districts in this case, to make the key decisions about delivering education services, including negotiating with teachers and principals about the terms of their work with students. Race to the top pushes us to centralize those decisions with a strong framework from the state for developing the skills of teachers and having a uniform, strong accountability system for them. Given our disgraceful achievement gap, I think we owe it to pursue this new strategy. The decision before us is how to do that while invoking the empowered professional will of our teacher corps. So, Madam Chair, I'll stop there, and hopefully I've allowed a few seconds for my good colleagues.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Your words are always worth it. Senator Bana.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Next time I'll go first, Representative Mariani.
That's fair.
Thank you. It is wonderful to be with everyone today, and as I look around this room, I know that those at the table and those sitting in the chairs are the people, some of the people, who have been working for many years on how we tackle this very important issue, and that issue being making sure each and every child has a world-class education. Representative Mariani has shared specifically some of the things that this legislature and those who have come before us have accomplished. And in fact, we have accomplished outstanding and excellent work to make Minnesota a leader in education. Yet we all know that we have failed in one of the most important things we have before us, and that is those of our children who have the very toughest time, who are dealing with poverty, who face the very toughest odds. We have not gotten our arms around how to make certain that each and every one of them is successful. For us, Race to the Top is a catalyst. We already had taken this challenge on. We hadn't yet been successful. Because of Race to the Top, this gives us a new opportunity to reach consensus to say we will not allow this. We will make this happen in Minnesota. I call our efforts around Race to the Top our Minnesota home field advantage. I don't know if many of you have had a chance to be at Target Field and see the new stadium, but I'm telling you, we do have a home field advantage, and it just isn't at Target Field. It's everyone in this room and all of those across the state. We can do better, and you're going to hear the legislative staff today speak about the proposal put forward by the department and the governor. I think they've done excellent and outstanding work, and that many of those ideas are things we ought to incorporate in our next application. I also think there's some things missing, and so I want to just raise a few of those questions that we ought to have in our mind as we listen, and I would hope that you would think about the answers to those questions. If we're talking about the students who are facing the toughest challenges, shouldn't we set specific benchmarks around those students? For example, shouldn't we have NAEP score targets? Shouldn't we have specific growth score MCA targets? Where do IEPs fit in? If we're looking at those who aren't succeeding, how are we going to incorporate, as we look at growth, multiple measures such as, are we being successful with our special ed students? Are we being successful with our ELL students? What are we doing with regard to that? Should we set statewide high school graduation rate targets? Should we say that perhaps 70 or 85% of our at-risk students in Minnesota graduate college and career ready by 2015? If we're serious about these specific at-risk students from age 3, age 2 to graduation, we ought to put within these proposals some very clear targets. Where does early childhood education fit into this discussion? We know that the achievement gap is most effectively battled by ensuring that our youngest children come to school ready to learn. Do we have that put in a robust fashion in our application? I commend the department for developing a strategy for how we might be able to adopt the Common Core standards, and I know we'll be taking a leadership role with regard to that. They are proposing that we carve out perhaps 15% so that if we go farther than the Common Core, we can deal with that. Is that enough? Do we want to make sure to have the ability to have more rigorous standards regardless of what Race to the Top says? I know that many of the people around this table, including the department staff, Senator Wieger have been working on our end of course test. Shouldn't that be part of our application, as that's something we're proud of? Shortly, you will hear from the Bush Foundation. I might suggest that their work is the Teaching Transformation Act, and that we ought to insert their proposal right into the heart of this proposal. So finally, Race to the Top does afford us all a unique opportunity to consider in a holistic and conceptual way how Minnesota might best support and improve student learning. I think it is incumbent upon us that we take the best and the brightest ideas from around this table. I see people like Senator Rummel and her work on community schools, and Representative Benson across the table with his self-governed schools, and Representative Dietrich over there and the work she's done around high schools. I could go around this table and say what each and every person has put forward. Senator Saltzman with her work on charter schools, and reading with Senator Olson. This is the kind of work that we must make sure is well articulated in this proposal. So in closing, I would end with a process question. We want to make sure that we have the buy-in of not just Education Minnesota, the school districts, but also a cohesive and united approach with the legislature and the department. So while we do have a very short timeline, and I appreciate that, I still suggest that it would be worth everyone's while for the members of this group and those in the room. If you read the Minnesota Promise, their vision from 2008, they practically could write the Race to the Top application. So bringing those people from this table and in this room together in various ways, and make sure that we all have ownership. We can't all write it, because then it won't hang together, but at least that we give strong direction on the points we think ought to be included. And then when it comes to May 1st, when we put this thing together, there will be buy-in, because we've all been at the table from day one. And I know that's been the intent of the department from the beginning, but it's not always easy to accomplish. So I pledge to you on behalf of all of us that we're ready to roll up our sleeves and be part of this process, and that it is time for us to turn our home field advantage into a Minnesota victory. We have done our practice run, and we are ready for the race. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Mr. Crow. Mr. Crow, you're going to go through the bill now at the table. Oh, Lisa's going to do it. Okay, I'm sorry. The game plan has changed. Ms. Larson. I left the meeting early yesterday, so Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, this is a very quick overview of a bill that we received yesterday. Per your directions, I will do this as quickly as I can. Section 1 delegates to the Commissioner and the Education Committee Chairs the authority to provisionally allow the Commissioner to adopt Common Core Standards and Rule. Section 2 requires teacher licensure candidates to pass a basic skills test before entering a teacher preparation program. It also provides for candidate remediation, and it requires pre-kindergarten and elementary teacher candidates to pass math test items as part of their teaching skills test. Section 3 directs the Board of School Administrators to adopt rules that would incorporate national standards for effective practice. Section 4 establishes a three-tiered licensure structure for school principals. Section 5 provides for data sharing agreements between the Board of Teaching and the Department, and between the Board of School Administrators and the Department. Section 6 strikes language that grants a one-year teaching license to teacher graduates who do not pass the skills exam. It requires teacher candidates to complete online courses related to pedagogy and in-course content. And it requires teacher licensure standards to be highly aligned with K-12 academic standards. Section 7 directs the Board of Teaching to establish a three-tiered licensure structure. Section 8 makes changes to licensure requirements that would govern out-of-state applicants that are consistent with other licensure changes proposed in this legislation. Section 9 establishes a two-year limited-term teacher license for individuals who want to pursue an alternative teacher preparation program approved by the board that would be offered either by a college or university, a nonprofit corporation, or a school district. Section 10 redefines teacher and administrative licenses to be consistent with the proposed three-tier licensure structure. Now, Sections 11 through 23 address Sections 122A40 and 122A41 in the statutes, which cover teachers generally in A40 and teachers in first-class city school districts, A41. So essentially, the sections are replicated twice to accommodate both of those sections. In Section 11, you have the probationary period. It premises a probationary teacher's contract on a growth plan portfolio, makes student achievement growth 35% of the total evaluation of a teacher, and includes local criteria for the evaluation as well. Section 12 establishes a process and requirements for school districts to support new teachers. Section 13 establishes a five-year teacher tenure system. After a teacher completes a probationary period, school districts will be allowed to renew or not renew a teacher's contract every 5 years based on professional growth plan, measures of student achievement that make student achievement growth 35% of the total evaluation of the teacher, as well as locally selected criteria. A teacher who is not renewed would be allowed to request a hearing. Section 14 establishes a process and requirements for school districts to support continuing contract teachers. Section 15 allows school districts to terminate an employment contract of a teacher who is not recommended for another continuing five-year contract. Sections 16 and 17 both make technical changes that are consistent with the proposed tiered licensing structure. Section 18 amends the definition of licensure to reflect the proposed tiered licensing structure. Section 19 again addresses the probationary period, but this would be for teachers in first-class city school districts. It premises a school district's decision to issue an employment contract to a probationary teacher on professional growth plan, measures of student achievement that again make student achievement grow 35% of the total evaluation of a teacher, as well as locally selected criteria. It would require a school district to notify a probationary teacher before July 1 if it decides when it of its decision whether it would renew or not or terminate a teacher. Section 20 establishes a structure and requirements for school districts to support new teachers. Section 21 establishes, again, the five-year teacher tenure system. Section 22, again, establishes a process and requirements for school districts to support continuing contract teachers. Section 23, again, allows a school district to terminate a continuing contract teacher whose five-year contract is not renewed if a teacher fails to correct identified deficiencies within a reasonable time. Section 24 makes a technical change that is consistent with the proposed tiered licensing structure. Section 25 has to do with teacher and principal evaluation. It uses criteria established in this section in directing the commissioner and a Minnesota Annual Teacher Appraisal System Task Force to develop an annual review and appraisal process that includes a rating system for both probationary as well as continuing contract teachers, as well as peer review and assistance programs. It directs the commissioner to convene a task force to develop a performance evaluation rubric for teachers. Also using the criteria in this section, directs the commissioner and the Minnesota Annual Principal Appraisal System Task Force to develop an annual review and appraisal process that includes a rating system for all probationary and continuing contract principals. It directs the commissioner to convene a task force to develop a performance evaluation rubric for principals. Section 26 allows school principals to participate in QCOMP. Section 27, in addition to, again, reiterating the ability of school principals to participate in QCOMP, links at least 35% of the 60% of teachers' compensation increase on student achievement growth, and it bases at least 60% of principals' compensation increase on specific performance measures. Section 28 requires staff development activities to be aligned with staff development plans based on student achievement data, focused on student learning goals, and used in the classroom. It also lists other requirements for staff development activities and makes increasing teacher and principal effectiveness specific to staff development outcomes. Section 29 requires that 2% of the staff development revenue be set aside for district and site staff development plans and to support challenging instructional activities and experiences, among other purposes listed in that section. Section 30 prohibits a school board from entering into a collective bargaining agreement that would limit the ability of a school superintendent to assign and reassign both teachers and principals within the district schools. Section 31 directs school superintendents to assign highly effective teachers and administrators to schools to best meet the needs of both students and schools. The definition of school here includes a public school, a non-public school complying with this section, and a charter school. Sections 32 and 33 have to do with charter schools. Section 32 allows a charter school authorizer to permit a charter school operator to expand the locations and grades of the charter school. It would allow an authorizer to permit the board of directors of a high-performing charter school to expand the charter to include new and separate schools not described in the original affidavit approved by the commissioner if the authorizer submits a supplemental affidavit to the commissioner for approval. Section 33 gives the commissioner authority to directly intervene in the persistently lowest achieving schools and charter schools. Section 34 directs the Board of Teaching to submit both an interim and a final report to the legislature on the effectiveness of alternative teacher preparation programs. Section 35 directs the commissioner to adopt rules on English language proficiency standards. And Section 36 repeals the current law governing alternative teacher preparation.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And now we'll call on Commissioner Segrin if she would like to make any global comments about the department's and governor's proposal. Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This legislative proposal really comes out of a couple of requests. The Senate had asked us to put some legislation together for them to look at to start to create a framework for legislative changes after we reviewed the application critique. Also, then the governor wanted to also have us put together some of the things that he had proposed that also fit into the application. And some of the things were things he proposed this session, like the Teaching Transformation Act, which did some basic things with the teacher preparation programs, like having specific entrance requirement of a passage of a basic skills test. If you don't pass it, then you are remediated until you can pass that test, and then you can go ahead and enter your preparation program. So some of these things are very fundamental preparation things that I think also, in light of the Bush Foundation work with the Teaching Transformation Act, some of those principles that are put in place, plus the Bush Foundation work, you'll have a nice blend of things. Then we also wanted to reflect some of the criteria that we didn't address as robustly as we probably should have in our application, and that is we looked at the winning applications. We also looked at some of the other applications that were finalists, and they set very specific, if they didn't already, they were going to specifically establish a statewide evaluation system for all teachers, whether they were probationary or tenured. So both the winning states had existing evaluation systems, but then they beefed them up by adding additional criteria, such as the linkage of academic achievement and having a percentage of that as part of their evaluation system. And then the finalists did the same thing. We did propose in our application that we create an evaluation system originally, but we had no comment about the academic achievement linkage as a percentage, any kind of a minimum. We proposed it, but we didn't go far enough according to the reviewers. We had high marks for our QCOM program, and of course we had proposed to give the opportunity for all school districts to participate in it, but we also said that that would be a negotiated agreement like it is now. And again, we did not establish any minimum criteria as far as their evaluation framework. Again, that is a locally negotiated opportunity. So again, we need to kind of look at how we combine the QComp, a statewide evaluation system, and work kind of to have another cohesive, as Senator Bonhoff said, have a cohesive plan that reflects kind of the strengths of what we have right now in our state. And then we also looked at applications that talked about licensure, and we wanted to establish a master licensure because that would fit very nicely into what we're doing with master and mentor teachers, with the need to set high criteria for what that master teacher would look like, so that there would be an additional voluntary license that you could get if you were interested in doing that. If you did get that license, you would be able to teach in any school district with that qualification to have that designation. We also looked at the applications, looked at the definition of highly effective teacher, and also they want to look at not only how you place effective, highly effective teachers into high needs schools, but also how you would remove ineffective teachers from your system. We did not address that. We were silent on that because we had not defined highly effective teacher. And so many of the applications also look at licensure issues in regard to your evaluation system and how you can move through to continue to demonstrate that you are continuing to improve as a professional. And so we have a five-year continuing license right now that has to be renewed based on continuing ed credit. We propose that that would be beefed up more robustly so that you have a professional growth plan. You have some of your licensure renewal linked to academic achievement, and then you also have work sample, et cetera, that would be your portfolio for your renewal of your license. That's a little bit stronger language. Some states actually have this every year, so we thought that this was fit our a current system and would be something that we could discuss as a framework to move forward. That kind of basically is the overview of the governor's and the legislative proposals that we've kind of tried to reflect in the applications that were the winning applications and looking at the finalist applications and frankly looking at the criteria that's in the application. This is not a negotiation with them, so it's kind of like, you know, we can try to frame this in our own way as a Minnesota state. Or we can decide not to do this. And so that's what is the challenge that's before us today.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Seeger. And there have been two more people that I've added to the list who want to testify. One is Roger Aronson, and one is Bob Meeks or whoever MSBA designated. I had told them at one time we were not having testimony, apparently. And so those two are added on, and so we'll shave a little bit of time off of our discussion that we're heading into now to make sure we have they get their 2 minutes as well.
Madam Chair,
Representative Mariani,
just very quickly, if I might, I think this is an important point of Commissioner Seguin. So my understanding is that the proposal that the governor has put together does not, in fact, define what a highly effective teacher is. What it does is it sets up a process at the local level by which that shall be determined, along some state kind of broad guidelines. Am I correct?
Commissioner Seeger.
Madam Chair, I haven't looked at the final draft, but I think we defined highly effective as a teacher that grew, had a growth, based on a growth model, grew a teacher more than a year of worth of growth. And effective would be someone that had growth of at least a year. So effective and highly effective would, based on our growth model, would be defined. And then you would set up your evaluation system, and you would also, part of the requirement is to actually report out how many highly effective teachers you have in effective teachers you have in your state. That's part of the criteria. So that you can then identify those and place those highly effective teachers in high-need schools. It's the whole thing is about trying to identify in your school district or your state those teachers that could that are having the biggest impact upon teachers. Now, the Delaware plan actually looked at, then once you identify those highly effective, they provide a retention bonus to follow that teacher into a turnaround school, one of the low-performing schools. So they also have that connection. So how do you use your highly effective teachers is really important, too.
Very good. And teacher effectiveness is our second topic. The first topic is alternative teacher licensure. And I have asked, and we have to do this briefly if we're going to have discussion from the group, which is what we really need today, to have the topic set up by Chair Mariani and Senator Bonoff, who have authored bills in the House and the Senate, and then Representative Slocum has an alternate bill if she would care to comment after they get done or not, her choice. So Representative Bonoff, go first this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the alternative licensure piece that you'll find within the department bill is, in fact, the Senate file that I offered during the session. And just to talk a little bit about the process of how we did this, we brought together all of those who had concerns around whether or not, in fact, alternative licensure provided enough safeguards with regard to quality. And so we brought together the Board of Teaching, we brought Education Minnesota. In fact, I actually had 5 meetings, I think, starting with last July with Education Minnesota. We talked to the department, the business community. I met with local union presidents, and we looked at what would it take so that we might feel comfortable with the notion that we could have, in fact, alternatively licensed teachers in our schools. And honestly, to this day, I don't think we've come to some agreement. But in terms of why I feel so strongly about that, I would point to 2 specific groups that could provide alternative licensure teachers at our schools. One would be, and I know we've all been talking about this, but the Teach for America candidates. And so we know that those kids come into that program because they have made a commitment and a promise to spend 2 years in the very toughest schools in our country. They have said that what they'd like to do for the next 2 years is go into places where students are not succeeding, where they don't necessarily have breakfast, where everything is against their success, and say they're going to get it done. And so they do make a strong commitment. And then, surprise, these kids, we have found 60% of them actually stay in education and they become the leaders of tomorrow. So we want that opportunity in our Minnesota schools. We do have some in our schools, but in fact there isn't a clear path for them to stay in Minnesota and for them to feel as though coming here is a safe choice because they're only able to be here on an exception basis. So some Representative Mariani and other Senator Saltzman, Representative Socom, we were excited to see this was included in Race to the Top because we thought this might serve as the incentive to allow us to come to some agreement and put this in our application and also increase then our chances of being successful in our application. The other group I would point to are the mid-career professionals, people who have given many years in their business career and are ready to do something different, and they want to give back, whether it be a chemist from 3M, whether it's an executive in a, you know, a company such as General Mills, who then says, you know, I've come to a point where I want to make a difference, and I want to make a difference with kids who don't have the greatest odds of being successful. And so we want a clear path for them to come into our system and feel welcomed. So I know for myself, you know, should I not get reelected next fall or maybe the next time, that would be something I would consider. And that I hope we would have a robust program in our state so that we do welcome our mid-career professionals.
Senator Bonoff, could you just very briefly describe your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't have it right in front of me. I actually didn't know that I was going to get this opportunity, but I know it by heart, so I can tell you. I will summarize that the bill states that to be an and perhaps you could direct me to the direct me to the language in the bill, but Section 9.
So Senator Bonoff, your bill is identical to the
governor's. Okay. Yes, Madam Chair.
I think
Chair.
That's all we need to know. Okay.
Excellent. But what I would say, Madam Chair, is that there has been talk that this is a very brief amount of training, where, in fact, my bill says that you have to be involved in a 200-hour intensive in-classroom experience, which means that, for example, if you're a Teach for America student in Minnesota, you go to a school in the south side of Chicago and you teach for an entire summer session. You're in that classroom. That's your 200 hours. And then in addition, you do your subject areas, and we talk about that you actually have to pass every test before you can be in the classroom. Just like, in fact, what the commissioner was stating in this new proposal where we say our current teachers coming in ought to pass those tests. This bill states that you must do that before you can into the get into the classroom. In addition, you must be part of an overall team where only one person can be the alternatively licensed candidate, so that you are having peer coaching and evaluators. You must be evaluated by the principal and this team in order to be deemed effective. You cannot be licensed unless you've passed your test in pedagogy and the subject areas, as well as gotten past the peer and the principal evaluations.
Okay, thank you so much. Representative Mariani.
Oh, Madam Chair, one last piece is that within this bill, I have said that you could be licensed or doing it in a program that is both run by higher ed or perhaps delinked from higher ed. For example, we have heard that some place like the Purpich School may want to do an alternative license program. So that is provided for in the bill. And also, that is what the Race to the Top application required, that you allow for that delinking.
Thank you very much. Representative Mariani, I think she got you back. Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, I think one of the issues, there's several issues here for us to wrestle with. I think one of them is this issue of whether an alternative pathway should be linked with post-secondary or not. I think we need to have careful conversation, and I hear the arguments both sides of that. I would just quickly only weigh in to say that I think that ultimately our big challenge before us is to make sure that our current main investments, our main delivery systems, in fact, do reform. And so for me, what I like about having a linked, consistently linked pathway is that it establishes that strong relationship between alternative preparation programs and our post-secondary systems, which into the foreseeable future will continue to be the main producers of teacher professionals in our state. And so, but I think that's a point that needs to be carefully thought through. I understand Senator Bonhoeff is correct that the federal expectation is to have a delinking. I guess I would, at this point, argue that I think we ought to push back on the federal government on that particular issue.
Hey, thank you, Representative Mariani. And members, now the Senator Stump and Representative Mariani and President Dewar and Commissioner Seeger and myself, and it sounds like a few others, legislators, are going to be all day tomorrow on this team with the Department of Education. So we would like to hear mostly now from the rest of the members who won't be there, so you or you know, anyone else that hasn't spoken, including President Dewar, raise your hand as you wish, and we have about 15 minutes to get input from you and keep discussing this. And I think one of the main points that Representative Mariani did mention is the House Connects alternative teacher licensure to higher ed. Teach for America works out of Hamline University. We do have Senator Bonhoeff laid it out very well, the issue of is there student teaching, and there is the 200 hours prior, and some consider that enough and some not. And then there's the area of continuing mentorship for the first couple of years, and if the teacher, how and if they get a licensure at the end of that time. So those are some of the issues, and we now want to hear from other legislators. I can't even see. Senator Salzman.
There. And thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say something that I think that, first of all, that our chair, Senator Stump, mentioned is that sometimes when we're under pressure, we perform better. And we do have just a few weeks here. But I think what's important to note is that we're at a time in our state, we've just recently seen some reports from the Itasca Group talking about Minnesota and how we absolutely are falling behind in many key indicators. And we have to squeeze as much talent out of every child in this state as possible. And our children are depending on us to be bold, to have courage, to be able to do some things that probably we wouldn't do if we weren't under pressure. But I certainly hope that we will always remember the children and those children who are struggling and are depending on us. And so I think that as we look at these proposals, they take us outside of our comfort zone. But I think that when we come to the table and listen to those who I think of are in the middle, our foundation community, our corporate leaders, who have made significant investments to support our schools, and you know, to listen to them, because they're going to cover our backs. I think that teachers, that many of these proposals that are in this, you know, in all these pieces of legislation, many of them come from teachers in our schools. And so I hope that, you know, tomorrow, as you work on this, as we work over the next couple weeks, that we turn to those people, because I think we see things as black and white, who really want us to be bold and will step up with us to make sure that we succeed. So I just want to put in a plug to Senator Bonoff, who has, you know, taken a leadership role on this and, you know, convening some of us to step forward with some proposals. And I think there are some good things here. And also, Commissioner, I, you know, commend you for sticking with this, because I think we can do some really good work and hit it out of the park, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Senator Salzman. Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A much more specific comment to the alternative licensure proposal. Some of the tension around this proposal, I think, has to do with assuring the quality of the results that come from these programs. And I know that Senator Bonhoff addresses specifically the quality of the individual candidates in terms of their testing. But one of the things we might want to look at is a time limit on the proposal to approve these programs, so that we do a performance check-in. We talk about performance evaluation for our principals and teachers broadly in this whole race to the top effort. And I think we might want to apply some performance measures to these programs that we are approving for alternative licensure. And I know that in the department's proposal on page 40, it does speak to that the Board of Teaching must submit an interim report on the effectiveness of alternative teacher preparation programs. Well, I would suggest that we specify what that effectiveness might entail in terms of some performance measure that may alleviate some of the concerns that some of our educators have about the quality of the program and the results of the program. So that's the suggestion for expanding that proposal.
Thank you very much, Representative Breinert. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the Commissioner. As I look at some of the elements that have been researched and have been proposed by people in academia to improve academic outcomes and deal with achievement gap, I know that we need to look at how we measure academic outcomes, how do we test children, how do we improve after-school programs, how do we incorporate parents in the process of helping their children succeed, how do we prepare children in early childhood education so that they come to school prepared and ready to learn. And the proposal that you bring to us basically has license elements, rules, authority to license, tier licensure, alternative teacher preparation programs, probationary periods, teacher continuing tenure system. I guess you got the point. So we're talking about teachers only. And what I would like to know is why your administration is proposing that we only address one element of the several elements that are necessary to improve academic achievement, and why your entire legislative proposal, which is several pages of transformation of policy with respect to teacher preparation, licensure, and tenure, could you give us a sense of why the administration wants to put emphasis only on one issue?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, the reason we have the emphasis is that's where we lost the most points. The heart and soul of the Race to the Top application is placing highly effective teachers into schools that are low performing and trying to turn them around and close the achievement gap. The other area that I think we also need to focus on is on the turnaround school strategies and how we're going to intervene with those lowest performing schools. We also are working with a group of minority educators and representatives that are also going to help us with some turnaround school strategies and language, because I also think that we need to look at a comprehensive process for turnaround schools. But the heart and soul of this is putting the most effective teacher in the classroom. That's where we lost. I think someone said that there's 138 points in this whole section. I think we got 50-something. I can't remember what the point count was. But that's why and it's not only about teachers, it's also about principal leadership, because we know that we need to have strong principals in our schools also that are strong instructional leaders. So there is also the emphasis on that. We had strong points for our assessments, our standards, for our data collection. We couldn't get all of our points because we need to put a couple more things in place, and we just frankly are waiting to get some money from another grant that we applied for. Then we can get the full points there. But it's really basically our great teachers and leaders section, and it's our turnaround school section that we need to really, and then also somebody mentioned having a clear focus on setting some goals, some academic goals for our low-achieving students, which our other winners did. But that's why. It's because that's where we lost a significant. And then, of course, we also lost points in getting total support from our state.
Follow-up, Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, I have a follow-up question. Actually, that's correct, Commissioner. We lost 138 points. Only 24 points are related to this category, which means that we have the opportunity to put 96 points in the other categories, which is much more than the 24 that we missed in this category alone. We had 7 main categories, 34 categories altogether. So that's what I'm puzzled about, picking this category as a 24-point category out of the 138.
Thank you very much.
Is the category, I had analyzed these points very carefully, because I'm very concerned that one of these categories is the only category that we're putting emphasis on when we have 36. And I think, you know, it's probably 5, 6, 7 points up to 11. This one is the one where we lost most points. But if we were to put this category aside and just say, okay, we need more time to review this and put together, you know, a cohesive plan where all partners could come together, we could submit this proposal and get 94 points, 94 to 96. I had the numbers, but I'm pretty sure it's 94.
Thank you very much. And, of course, what we lost the most points in was buy-in, which is why we're all here. And the federal government assigned it to the governor, but now that we're on round two, we have, you know, we're looking for legislative buy-in. We've invited President Dewar, and so we could gain the most points if we get buy-in. But there's kind of an inverse relationship, as I just said to the press this morning, between buy-in and what we do. So we have to get that delicate balance and figure out where we can get the most points.
Madam Chair,
could I go to Representative Morgan and then get back to you, because we're only have 6 more minutes of this category, and these are the legislators we won't hear from tomorrow. Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and everybody who's up there is going to be meeting to work together on this tomorrow. I would urge you to focus in 3 areas. Number one, maintaining high standards for teachers. If we are going to have world-class expectations of our students, we have to have world-class expectations of our teachers. Number two, please don't forget that the school culture is one of collaboration, where all teachers in the building work together, mentoring, peer review, all of those things that we currently have in law to help all of the students succeed. If we put teachers on islands, the students will be negatively impacted by that. We need to make sure that teachers are in a culture where collaboration continues to be the key. And finally, let's make sure we do reform we actually want. This money is going to go away. We need it because our schools are so starved right now, but this money is going to go away. So let's make sure that whatever reform we have is reform we want in the long run and not just something that will help us chase some dollars now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And Commissioner Segrin wanted a brief response before we go to Representative Ward. Commissioner Segrin.
Just a response to Senator Torres Ray's point thing. Of the 138 in the great teachers and leaders, we lost 55 points. There are lots of different areas within it, and there are a number of points. So there may have been 34 and 1, but there were accumulation within that. So that was where we lost quite a few points. It's complicated. This is a really complicated application, and that whole area is very huge, and just wanted to clarify that you know, we had clumps of points that we missed in different areas.
Thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to remind all of us that, you know, and I think Senator Bonham said it well, we have a great quality education in the state of Minnesota, always have, and hopefully always will, and we have some of the highest ACT and SAT scores in the nation, and we're proud of that, and our students and our staff do great stuff, but can we get better? Of course we can, and that is something that we always drive for in Minnesota. And I thank the people that are going to be meeting tomorrow to review the application with the race to the top, and I want to make 3 points and spin off of what Representative Morgan talked about. Very specifically, though, we want to make sure that we have the highest quality candidates possible that go into education. And if you are a person that looks at going to education and says, "Geez, I don't know if I'm going to go into a field that every 5 years I can almost sudden lose my job," I don't know that that's going to lead to the best quality people going into a field. So I would just like to address that concern. I believe. I also agree with Senator Bonham when she says that early childhood family education is a huge investment that we need to look at, and I hope that that will be also considered highly in this regard as well. And thirdly, I have one that has stated in committee the importance of student teaching, and I really want to emphasize the fact that that all of us in education, all of us that are teachers, have been teachers, or hope to be teachers, know the importance of education, student teaching, know the importance of being mentored by those quality, experienced senior staff, and I hope that we will not lose the importance of the quality and the quantity of student teaching. I get concerned about, would a veterinarian become a good medical doctor? Perhaps, but, you know, the medical profession puts the doctors through a year-long residency once they have learned the book knowledge skills. And, I think that we need to make sure that we have enough student teaching experience that provides quality for the students in front of them. So I wanted to make those 3 points, Madam Chair, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Ward. We have time for probably one or maybe two more legislators, depending on how long Representative Norton takes. So, Representative Dabney, you're at her mercy. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to speak quickly here. I agree with some of the concerns I've heard, but a couple points in the legislation. I do think we need to insist, I agree with Representative Mariani, on a link to higher education, and perhaps we can meet the goals of the federal legislation by putting in some language about studying something further, whatever it might take to make them happy, but I do think that's very important if we're going to move ahead on the alternative licensure piece, which I am a co-author on and support. Secondly, Section 33 has the ability to intervene language, and I think that's interesting. It's not very well fleshed out. It's just kind of a statement, so I guess I would ask that perhaps a little more thought or flesh be put on that statement. I do think I've had concerns all along as NCLB requires as schools have trouble that they turn to charter schools, and yet our charter schools have a higher rate of failure as a percent than our public schools, and I think that's an issue we need to address both in public and charter schools. So I hope you'll flesh that out a little bit further. And then I just want to kind of make a statement as we move ahead. I agree with some of the comments I've heard here. We do need to close the gap. We do need to have high-quality teachers, but we have to also remember, and I know this is an education committee and an education grant, but that we cannot close the gap with teachers and education alone. This is a community issue, and nowhere do we address how we're going to involve our communities and our business leaders and everyone and parents, frankly, in solving this issue. So I would really like to see that fleshed out a little bit as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Dabney, you get the final word as Dr. Sato comes up, if she's here somewhere to the table. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Norton actually may have provided a very good segue. I want to encourage the team that goes forward tomorrow to be more bold in their work. I'm concerned that the Obama administration is making the same fundamental error that the Bush administration did with No Child Left Behind. And that is that they're so busy fiddling with the schools that they don't see the kids in the schools. And I want to encourage that we push back on the Obama administration in our application, particularly in the area that the commissioner identified as one where we have the greatest work to do, and that's the turnaround schools. And shift the frame from the schools and the teachers to the kids and the families, because that's where the issue is. We've got great teachers and principals in those schools who work hard every day to meet the challenges. Representative Norton raised the issue of the community. When we look at reforming these turnaround schools, a community schools approach where we coordinate and bring in community partners, social services, supports for those kids and their parents. The New York Literacy Zones may be a place to look, where they work with the family literacy, strengthen the academic background and achievement of the parents, as well as the schools and the parents' workplace skills. Looking at extended day and year for these schools. We know that works from other states. We can target that so that it's cost effective. The alternative teacher licensure should be a part of that, so we can get the right people into those schools. I want to encourage the team tomorrow to be bold in pushing back and putting kids as the focus of the work that we do and the focus of our application. Where the greatest challenge is in these low-performing schools is also where Minnesota's greatest opportunity for finally working to close the achievement gap will be found.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And we have one more person who I can't say no to, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to piggyback on what Representative Dabney and several others have mentioned, realizing that the Race to the Top has a focus on education reform, but it's so important if we're going to really bridge that gap and help maximize our talented resource, which is our children. The things that come to mind over the years is it's not just what happens in that classroom. It's what happens at home. It's what happens before school, whether those children have a breakfast. It happens before school, like preschool and all-day kindergarten. We have not, in Minnesota, a progressive education state, do not have all-day kindergarten or a comprehensive preschool program. It happens after school. What happened to those after-school programs in Moorhead? When they dropped their after-school programs, the crime in the neighborhoods went up dramatically, measurably went up. The same happened in Duluth in certain neighborhoods, and the same happened here in the urban areas. So it's not just in that classroom. We have to look at education reform in a broader sense. Otherwise, we're not going to be successful as we should be. And so I really want to join my words in on what Representative Dabney and others have said.
Very nice. Thank you. Now we have Dr. Misty Sato, and she was in the House helping us out this year and has been in the Senate other years as well, from the University of Minnesota. And she's done some work on using value-added growth models as a measure of teacher effectiveness. And we are discussing in this application a highly effective teacher and how is that measured. And we want to be sure, as with everything we're doing here, that we're doing good and not harm by conforming to the application. I think she's very helpful in that, Dr. Sato.
Thank you, Representative Greiling and Senator Stump. I appreciate being asked to be here today. I'm going to talk a little more broadly than just value-added and look at teacher evaluation. I'm not a statistician by training, which is where the value-added modeling comes from out of statistical modeling. But I'll present some information about how that system works and then look a little more broadly at teacher evaluation, which is really the work that I do professionally. I think that we've become enamored with value-added models, which have their roots in educational research. The idea that linking teacher performance to student performance is a small part of the race to the top. When you look at the number of points that are accounted for that in the race to the top application, it's actually a very small part. And we want to really position this value-added conversation within a broader system of how do we really understand quality teaching or effective teaching when we see it, and how do we recognize it and reward it and share those practices, and in those cases where we need to dismiss the chronic underperforming teacher. Statistically, this idea of value-added growth modeling says that you measure students' achievement at 2 points in time. You statistically account for some of those baseline factors of who the child is, the characteristics they bring into the situation, and that way you can attribute that growth, that learning achievement growth, to the actual teaching that happens in a classroom or in a school. That's a little bit of statistical acrobatics that has to happen in order to get at that value added that an individual teacher might add. And I just want to comment that this model of using value added did not come out of an evaluation model, but came out of a research model used to measure the growth of students attributed to groups of teachers and not the individual teacher. So there's a little caution here of thinking about shifting a statistical model developed for research purposes into a purpose of teacher evaluation or personnel decision making. There are some limitations to the idea of using value added. It seems simple on the surface, and we certainly want to have teachers who contribute to student learning in ways that we can measure and measure easily and efficiently, but we also want to recognize the limitations. One of those limitations is that it has the potential of overemphasizing teaching to the test. And so as we look at what assessment of students we're using and using value added models, we want to make sure that we have in place the tests that we want to assess our students by, and that we're actually adding the value that we want to add. So we might consider, as we're moving forward with this application, looking at the student evaluation system and asking ourselves, are we measuring what we value? And if there are ways that we could build evaluations for students that would get at 21st century learning skills, like analyzing data and using information to make decisions, participating as citizens in society, there might be other assessments that we could consider for students while we're looking at the teacher evaluation system, also consider the student evaluation system. In value-added growth modeling, there's some problems with attributing student gains to specific teachers. So imagine being in a school where the history teacher is teaching the children or teaching the students how to write essays and really emphasizes those skills of writing, and then you use value-added modeling and that growth in the student's learning is then attributed to the English teacher because we think that that's where that learning would have happened. So attribution to individual teachers on what students have learned is very difficult to tease out statistically when you don't know what's happening within the context of the school. Another limitation that we might consider is that some of these kinds of linking teacher performance to student performance have in the past proved to provide disincentives for teachers to serve high-need students. For example, the students who don't yet speak English or have special learning needs, that this linking the teacher performance to student performance, if teachers see this as a process of I need to then be teaching the students who I think are easier to teach, it could disincentivize our most experienced teachers of wanting to be in classrooms with children they know are going to prove to be more challenging. And so this could inadvertently reinforce current practices in which inexperienced teachers are disproportionately assigned to the neediest students and schools and disencourage high-need students from entering and staying. So this goes back to what Commissioner Singer was saying is the heart and soul of the Race to the Top application of how do we assign teachers who we know are experienced and effective to those students. And so we want to make sure we don't have this inadvertent effect of providing incentives for teachers to not want to teach in certain classrooms or in certain schools. I'll also point out, as Representative Morgan pointed out earlier, that this process risks creating competition among teachers within schools and works in opposition to what we understand about the power of professional community in schools as being a proven mechanism for improving student achievement. So whatever we do in terms of value-added growth, we want to make sure that it's done in a community-based setting that doesn't incentivize competition within schools among teachers. We want to maintain trust in that culture idea within schools because we do know that that does improve student achievement. One last limitation that we have in growth modeling is the that with the current data available through the state administered tests that we have, we would only be able to determine the value added for about 30% of the current teachers. So we would have to work to find measures other than the current achievement tests for early childhood teachers for most of the high school subjects. In order to apply the statistical model, you would have to have some standard measure, and we don't have those standard measures across all subject matters across all teachers. So if we're going to be serious about measuring effective teachers using growth modeling, we'd have to have some assessments in place that would allow us to do that. So if used for individual teacher evaluation purposes, I would just raise the following technical issues related to the statistical modeling. One is that teachers' ratings are affected by differences in the students who are assigned to them. So even though the statistical model can account for a lot of the difference in classrooms, it doesn't account for all of it. So we are setting up an attribution system that could not identify effective teachers who have high numbers of students who are more challenging in the classroom. We also have some problems with missing data that threatens the validity of the results for individual teachers. This is particularly important to consider in low-income communities with high mobility rates and homelessness, so that you lose a lot of data when you can't match up a beginning test score and an end test score because of the mobility of the students. And finally, it's almost impossible to fully separate the influences of students from other teachers, as well as the school conditions, on their apparent learning. You know, learning is a complex process, and it happens within that school community and school culture. So attributing learning to the individual teacher and teasing that out when you're trying to work toward school culture and school community-based learning proves to be very difficult. So to understand the influences on student learning, I think we need more data about student learning, and teachers' practices and the teaching that happens in context are going to be needed. While these models are based on student test scores, they're useful for looking at groups of teachers at this district or school level. They can be problematic as measures for making evaluation decisions for the individual teacher. So they can be used as a package within a package of teacher evaluation, but I want to back up and ask this bigger question of why are we starting with value-added measures for teachers and not with what we value in educating our students, or starting with what Commissioner Sigrun has talked about in terms of identifying what we mean by effective teaching and go back to our standards of effective practice for teachers that are established in law in Minnesota and are substantiated by decades of research on what we know to be effective teaching. So this would mean building an evaluation system for teachers that uses reliable measures of performance of teaching in the classroom, in addition to this package that uses some value-added modeling for particular things like reading and math scores. So if we created an evaluation system that seamlessly transfers from the pre-service education of teachers into the in-service education of teachers based on our current definition of effective teaching set in the standards, we would have some clear criteria on which to make performance-based judgments about the quality of teaching that happens in the classroom. This would allow us to examine the performance of teachers, especially around working with students from different cultural backgrounds, from addressing individualized student learning needs, from really looking at the relationship that teachers build with students in classrooms, both at a subject matter level and in that relational level that continues to foster student growth and development. I'm also looking at some of the districts that have been using some of these performance-based assessments. We use them here in Minnesota with National Board certification. Some school districts who are QCOMP districts are using performance-based assessments in formative ways, but we don't yet have a state standardized way of looking at teacher performance and relating that to the types of teaching that we would like to see. So as we look at this package of teacher evaluation, we certainly want to be considered with the outcomes on student learning. But if we only look at outcomes, then we'll fall into a trap that happened 30 and 40 years ago when research on effective teaching was happening, and we end up with an outcome without really knowing how we got there. And so knowing what the process for getting to that outcome is very important if we want to really recognize what high-quality teaching is, how to continue to nurture and develop that, and have opportunities for sharing some of those best practices across teachers. I think this harkens to some of what Education Minnesota has been suggesting in terms of having opportunities for teachers to share their practices when they are proving to be effective, and how do we build into this evaluation system that opportunity to spread those high-quality practices and not just award the teacher for an outcome measure that has some limitations to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Sato. We always value university people with huge expertise and those who also can be concise. So thank you for being both of those. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you comment on the use of NWEA as a measurement tool for student progress?
Dr. Sato.
Senator Stump, if NWEA has a system of tests that some people call the that has a well, there are different. We use the MCAs. Everyone is required in Minnesota to use the MCA assessments. The NWEAs are an optional test that school districts can use. So not everyone administers the NWEAs. In value-added modeling, statisticians prefer the NWEAs because they're done on a growth scale across time so that you can measure students' change over time, whereas the MCAs are more aligned with the expectations, the curricular expectations, curricular standards in Minnesota. There's some debate in the measurement community about what kinds of assessments we should use. In value-added, you want these growth scale tests, but in terms of looking at what we want students to learn, the MCAs are better aligned with our learning outcomes that teachers are expected to teach to. So we're in a little bit of a quandary in saying we want standards-based tests for students, but then we want a value-added growth model that doesn't use a standards-based test to measure the growth over time. Across time for students.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Sato, I'd just like to summarize what I heard you saying in terms of, yes, I know you're looking for the source of the voice here. What I understand you to be saying is that value added has an appropriate place in teacher evaluation, but you caution about what particular model we might adopt and how, whether it applies to the individual teacher, what its statistical significance is at the individual level. But it would be one measure among other measures and a multiple measure vision for teacher evaluation that's standards based. Is that an accurate summary?
Yes.
Dr. Sato.
Yes.
Great. Okay, thank you. Representative Bryant, you're finished. Senator Banoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Sato, building on what Chair Stump asked you, with regard to the NWEA, isn't one of the solutions that other states have adopted actually having the NWEA folks rewrite that test to include and embed their state standards? Hasn't that been the direction that some have followed?
Dr. Sato.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Senator Bonoff, I don't have that information. I think that would be a possible solution to this quandary that I was describing before. I would offer that another way that we might look at student performance would be to really look at the kinds of performance we could embed in schools at grade levels that get at some of the more higher order thinking and critical analysis, use of information, the things that we talk about now in terms of the skills that we need toward a globalization and 21st century learning. And so the development of that form of assessment system that's more performance oriented at grade level could be another avenue. It's a more expensive development avenue, but in terms of if we're going to teach to a test, would we want a test that we want to teach to, or a performance that we want to teach to, would be another consideration I would put on the table.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Doctor, you mentioned teachers possibly shying away from high-need students. But thinking in terms of measuring students' progress and comparing, for example, a gifted student to a high-need student and trying to measure their progress, could you talk about the level of progress from a lower base of a high-need student to a gifted student? Might it be easier to measure progress, in fact, from a higher-need student compared to a gifted student?
Dr. Sato.
I'm trying to understand the question. So two things happen with value-added modeling. You get less stability in the teacher evaluation times at the top end of the scales and at the bottom ends of the scales. So that means that you would need multiple years of data usually up to three if you have the time to wait for that, to make sure that the, what you're measuring is teacher performance on those ends of the scales are stable over time. So, but I think what you're asking is, if you're looking at student growth, you really want to be concerned with, are we bringing the bottom part of the bottom population up, and not be so concerned about the top population, that there's a ceiling effect, or they're doing okay by themselves, and we can not worry so much about the gifted and talented.
Well, just in terms of the progress.
Representative Anderson, Dr. Sato.
So I don't think that there's an easier technique or method for that. You use the same method and technique to do those same measurements. It would allow us with that information to be able to monitor the achievement gap, you know, and think about how we are really attending to trying to close that achievement gap. There's some issues with, you know, how we would define effective if it's 1 year's growth over time, but I think I heard Commissioner Segrin say 1 year plus, because if you're just looking at 1 year, then you're just going to sustain the gap over time, because it's going to just bring everybody up 1 year, and the gap will remain, although there does tend to be a ceiling effect on those higher achieving students.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Sato, I think in part you anticipated my question. In your remarks, you said that it would be important for us to ask what we value before we start to decide how we measure that. And then I wanted to ask you to expand a little bit on these 21st century skills. What are some of the indicators? What are some of the things that you know of that contribute to the development of 21st century skills?
Dr. Sato.
Senator Rummel, I think there are some models in schools across the country in limited ways that use performance indicators for students. End-of-year performances, portfolio development, end-of-year research projects that students build up to across the academic year, and then are responsible for independently or in teams producing some complex form of performance. So it might be a research study that they've conducted over time. It might be a community-based study. It's the kinds of projects that you would imagine that would require students to do research, to synthesize information, to prepare a synthesis of that, and present it publicly. In lots of these models, the students then present that performance to a panel of stakeholders. This would bring in the community and the business community and the parents to come in and be a judge of the quality of that student performance and determine, you know, what the and be part of setting the expectations for they want students to be able to do at grade level in these more complex performances. They're rubric-based. That means that you have to have a criterion on which you would make the judgment in terms of quality, and to be able to describe the quality in a way that the student understands what the expectations are prior to entering into putting that performance together. These tend to happen in more smaller school environments, in charter school environments, in independent school environments, but it doesn't prohibit us from using them in larger public school environments if we put our minds and energies toward developing those kinds of expectations.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and something that Senator Stump said yesterday, you know, as we talk about this particular part of the bill, should we be doing change just for change's sake? And from what your testimony was, Dr. Sato, I see a lot of red flags. I see a lot of concerns that you have, and a couple of things that came up: additional assessments, more testing, teaching to the test. And I think we would all agree that our students are currently over-tested, and I think it takes valuable time away from the things that we need to be doing in the classroom with so many different ways of educating our students. So could I just, yes or no, you see this particular part, this policy would be additional assessments or testing?
Dr. Sato.
Senator Dahl, we could do value-added measuring with the current MCA tests or NWEA. We would have to require schools to do the NWEA if we went down that route. So that would be additional testing. We could do it with the MCA tests in limited ways, because MCA tests are not administered at all grade levels or for all subject matters. So if we wanted to reach even 90% of the teaching population, let's say we would have to add tests to or some other assessment to students' work in schools to be able to do that. I heard Senator Representative Mariani talk about using course end of course tests at the high school level as being a consideration. using other kinds of measurements in terms of engagement, that doesn't really attach to some what people think of in terms of learning, but it would be another option that we would have. So if we want to reach more teachers with value-added modeling, we would have to develop more assessments for students.
Thank you. And the final word, Senator Weaker.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And it was somewhat similar to my question initially that Senator Dahl posed, but I'll expand. I believe in pointing out the red flags, Dr. Sato, for growth model. You said we only have 30% or so now of teachers. So the overwhelming majority, we don't have anything in place. Could you give us an idea of resource commitment, timeline, if we were to do that? And then I'm also interested, at the university level, is there anything comparable for measuring faculty effectiveness there that you may have done in your own department? Thank you.
And Dr. Sato, your final word.
I cannot speak to how much resources it would take to build this system. I think part of that would be the proposal, you know, within the Race to the Top application, that that money would be used to initially help build the system, and then we would have to sustain it over time. In terms of faculty assessment at the university, faculty are assessed with student evaluations at the end of each course. And it's a student report that asks some general questions and some open-ended questions, and faculty receive those summary evaluations, and those evaluations are then used to make merit-based pay decisions and tenure and promotion decisions for faculty. Faculty who are not yet tenured are also required to be observed by a peer, and that observation becomes part of the file and part of the review process. So it's there's no standards-based rubric for that review, so it's one of those systems that has very open-ended and has very little reliability. And I will say, just to finish up, that in pre-service teacher education, we are moving toward a teacher performance evaluation system that really looks at the complexity of practice using video analysis and student work analysis and the reflections of the teachers on how they have helped students learn over time, given the learning goals that they set for those students. And that teacher performance assessment should be coming online statewide within the next 2 years, and we're working very hard to make that happen. So when I said about a seamless transition from pre-service to in-service, I think whatever we do to move forward with Race to the Top, we need to be looking at this as a whole teacher continuum and the evaluation system that is put in place there, and not create one system here and a different system there.
Thank you, Dr. Sato, for sharing your time and expertise. And after we've had our working group tomorrow, I'm sure we'll want your critique again. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greiland.
Yes. Peter Hutchinson and Susan Hegard. The next topic is the teacher mentoring and staff development. And we've started a little bit on this highly effective teacher discussion because that is an important part of the application and what makes a real difference for students. So we're very excited to have, as part of our application before, and hopefully we can magnify it and explain it better in this application, what you're doing. So I don't know who's going first, but welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I think I'll start. I'm Susan Hegard. I'm a vice president with the Bush Foundation, and I lead the education work there. I'm joined by Peter Hutchinson, who is the president of the Bush Foundation. We're here today because teachers matter a lot. Our goal at the Bush Foundation, one of the three goals that we've set forward, is to improve student readiness for college and close the achievement gap. And our board has agreed to a $40 million investment over 10 years. It's the largest single investment our board has ever made. So it's historic for us as well. The means by which we're going to help close the achievement gap and improve student readiness for college is by focusing on teacher preparation programs and improving teacher effectiveness. And the definition that we use is that a teacher would be able to move a student a year or more of growth. More about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. This is a 10-year-long commitment. It's not a 3-year deal like we usually, you know, do in the foundation community. We're looking at a long-term sustained investment, and we are partnering with these institutions. We are right alongside them, supporting them and working with them. Assessment is a critical part of this work that we're doing, and of the $40 million, there's $4 million that we're investing in assessment. As Dr. Sato mentioned, value-added assessment is a critical aspect of this. It's not the only aspect, but it's a critical aspect of this. There are other multiple measures that we're looking at, too. Peer review, student reviews, video, etc. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on right now in terms of assessing teachers in addition to the value-added work. What's really heartening, I'm not going to go through this whole packet of slides that we've provided to you, but there's a slide here that shows, this is the heartening news, that a student, even a student who's very far behind, can catch up. And this chart shows that a student with an ineffective teacher for 3 years falls around 50 points behind on assessments. And we're just really excited about the fact that if we can have effective teachers, more effective teachers, those students really have a chance to catch up. And the students who've fallen furthest behind, we were talking about this with Dr. Sato as well, they actually stand to gain the most. Very exciting. So another piece of this that's brave and courageous of our partners is that they're willing to guarantee the effectiveness of their teachers. They're willing to stand behind their teachers when they go into the K-12 districts and schools support their effectiveness. Strong partnership with K-12 is a critical aspect of the work here. You know, we all thought, well, higher ed and K-12, they're talking all the time to one another. Well, sometimes they do, but it's not happening as often as it should and not as intentionally as it ought to. The scale that we're talking about with this project, it's 25,000 new teachers over the next 10 years. We're working in North and South Dakota, but the bulk of the teachers will be prepared here in Minnesota. There are four components, recruitment, preparation, placement, and support. And support is the piece that I think you want us to focus on most here today, but all four aspects are critical and all need to be addressed more intentionally by all of us, including our partners. We're asking that these programs provide 3 to 5 years of support to teachers. The data shows that teachers leave. The first 5 years are the most critical years for teachers. Many of them leave in the first 5 years. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes we have teachers who get laid off over and over and they get frustrated and go. But think of the folks that we're missing, you know, who are not supported sufficiently or properly, who would be excellent teachers. That's where we need to provide our focus. And I think with the recruitment piece of this too, if the recruitment and the preparation are better targeted, you're going to have better retention in the long run. We have a historic opportunity before us. I think Representative Greiling and others have stated this is, it's great that Race to the Top's here. We have a great opportunity that the Obama administration and Secretary Duncan have put before us. But this is something that we ought to be looking at anyway, and we ought to not just be doing it because of Race to the Top. So I wanted to just thank you for my time here, and I wanted to hand this over to Peter Hutchinson, who's going to talk more about some of our ideas and mentoring and induction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hegard. Mr. Hutchinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You also have in your packet, I think it's a three-sheet thing that says Race to the Top, Reform Options at the Top. Here's the question we were wrestling with. Well, first of all, as you probably know, we helped underwrite the first application. So we have sort of an interest in how it turned out, which, as you already know, was not good. And we spent a little time trying to wrestle with, well, if you really wanted our students to race to the top, what's the key? And what would differentiate Minnesota from every place else on the planet? And we think the answer to that is that for the next 25,000 teachers, which will join the workforce over the next 10 years, every one of them, without exception, every vacancy that's created in any school over the next 10 years ought to be filled with an effective teacher. If we could guarantee that to our kids, we can guarantee them a future that they wouldn't otherwise have, and we could guarantee to our state a future it wouldn't otherwise have. And we would be doing something that no other state has done. So what would that entail? If you start with the proposition that the goal is to make sure that every vacancy that ever develops in the next 10 years is filled by an effective teacher, we think there's a bunch of parts that you can assemble together from what's already kicking around out there and end up with something pretty unique. We start with this debate that you've already wrestled with about alternative licensing. alternative licensure may or may not be a good idea, but it's such a small part of the teacher preparation universe that the real opportunity is to change the universe. Make what is an okay system a fabulous system, regardless of where the teachers come. So, for example, we've been blessed, frankly, in this state to find 11 teacher preparation programs that have the courage to say, when we prepare a teacher henceforth, we will stand behind them. We, the higher education institution, we will guarantee their effectiveness, which means something unprecedented. They're going to have to follow those teachers into the classrooms where they start to teach. And they're going to be hooked up with those teachers for 3 to 5 years. So now, instead of whatever mentoring program the K-12 district has to offer, they also have the resources of the higher ed system behind them. That's an unprecedented commitment. Well, why wouldn't we make that the criteria for preparing teachers? Why wouldn't we say, if you want to be a teacher preparation program in Minnesota, you only have to do one thing. You have to guarantee the effectiveness of the teachers you prepare. And why would we care where they came from as long as someone was prepared to make that guarantee and provide the data and the support to live up to that guarantee and to say, in effect, if you deliver, you continue to prepare teachers in our state, and if you fail, you don't continue to prepare teachers in our state. That seems to us like such a game changer in terms of our thought about it. Becomes the new alternative. I mean, it's like a statewide alternative certification program that then applies to everybody. One standard, one very high standard for everyone. And I think it's worth considering whether or not you can do that. And it's that combination that if you're going to guarantee the effectiveness of the teachers, you're going to have to follow them into the classroom. You're going to have to stick with them for those first difficult three to five years. Now, there's other pieces that would need to come together to make that work. You need a definition of effectiveness, and as Susan already told you, at least in our work, we're using, at a minimum, a year's worth of growth for kids. Now, there obviously are going to need to be other parts to that, but if kids aren't growing, that ought to be sort of prima facie evidence of a challenge. And in if you're a new teacher and you're not delivering that growth today, what you want are partners to help you figure it out. That's where the higher education institution and the K-12 institution come together to support that teacher. We're going to need to be able to link student data to teachers and teacher data to the preparation programs. Now, as you know, we're working on that in Minnesota. We're not quite there. For the 11 schools we're working with, we're going to be able to deliver the first information on this next year, because they're standing up now, and we want to be able to have the data now. But that's got to be a critical part of trying to put this new system together. As Susan already mentioned, we're challenging all the higher ed institutions to think about their entrance requirements. Who ought to go into teaching? And lest you think this is only about SATs and ACTs and GPAs, there's a lot more to teaching than just grades. Now, grades are not irrelevant, but there's a lot of research now about the kind of young person or even older person who ought to go into teaching, someone who has a sense of perseverance, who has a record of accomplishment, who sets high goals and achieves them. We can find those people. It's not impossible. And we've done some market research that indicates those are exactly the people who would like to go into teaching. But the truth is, today we know more about recruiting athletes into college than we know about recruiting teachers. Well, let's at least make them equal. And we can. And again, I think the good news for you is the higher education institutions are ready to do that. So thinking about what are the entrance requirements and how can we make them appropriate and high for what we're looking at. Related, of course, to other graduation requirements. What does it take to graduate from a teacher preparation program? Ms. DeSato just told you about the teacher performance assessment that's being developed. It's a great example of raising the standards before you graduate. So you know you got a sense of quality in that young person before they enter their first classroom. And again, if you have to guarantee their effectiveness, you want to have a pretty tough exit requirement, because you'd like them to be effective on day one. That would be the best deal for you. So you want good exit requirements. You could also look at things like changing licensing. You've all been talking about three-tier licensing in one form or another. A way to think about that might be that you get your initial license if you pass the sort of basic performance assessment when you graduate from your teacher preparation program. But you get your continuing license when you demonstrate your effectiveness. That's the ace in the hole. That if you can really deliver for students, that's when you want to become a continuing teacher, and that's when we would want to happen. Similarly, you could tie tenure to this same notion.
that instead of making tenure a three-year and out kind of thing, think about making tenure conditional on demonstrating effectiveness. If you did that in your first year, you could be eligible for tenure in your first year. But you might want to give teachers 3 to 5 years to get to the point where they're delivering the kind of effectiveness that we want in classrooms. That would be consistent with the data about how new teachers develop over time. So now you can start to connect some of the regulatory infrastructure of teaching back to the question of effectiveness. And remember, you got those higher education institutions trying to make sure it happens, which is a huge lift in the system we already have today. And finally, you got to think about how this is all financed. Now, it's easy to talk about these teacher preparation programs following their kids into classrooms, but it's not so easy to pay for. Now, the good news in Minnesota is, well, I guess it's good news. Today in Minnesota, you all spend about $65 million a year on teacher preparation. Now, you know you don't do that explicitly. You give a chunk of dough to the university and another chunk to MinSCU, and you have financial aid dollars and so on. You also allocate money to the K-12 systems who then spend it on teacher preparation because, as those of us who used to be in K-12 would say, we lovingly have to retrain the new teachers that we get. So there's about $65 billion today being consumed for teacher preparation. That money is producing about twice as many teachers as end up in our classrooms. Just pause there for a second. We're spending $65 million a year, and we're producing roughly twice as many teachers as end up in our classrooms. If you took control of that money and focused it on producing the teachers we actually want, the kinds of teachers we want, at the skill level we want, the attributes that we want, whether they're STEM or ELL or special ed, getting diversity in our classrooms, I think for the same amount of money, you might be able to get a much better outcome. To do something like that, you'd follow a model that we found in the United Kingdom, in England. When the government there faced a similar situation, they took the dollars they were currently spending on teacher preparation. They didn't make them bigger or smaller. They just spent them differently. And they created something called the Teacher Development Agency, which had just two jobs. Job one was to go out and recruit the very best people in all of the United Kingdom and try to get them to become teachers. And by the way, they recruited broadly. Today, as a result of this, half of all the new teachers in the United Kingdom are career changers, people moving into teaching from another career, because they found that was a very good resource to go to find effective teachers. So job one, recruit the very best people into teaching. Job two, allocate those dollars to the preparation programs who would make the commitment to deliver the teachers you really want. So if you created something like the Office of Effective Teaching, you might say to that office, do these two jobs. Go out and recruit the very best people we can in all of Minnesota to come into teaching, regardless of where they happen to be today, whether they're 18 years old or 48 years old. And secondly, make sure there are slots for them in programs that can prepare them to teach our kids and to get to a level of effectiveness. You put all that together, you've got something that doesn't exist anywhere in the country. A teacher preparation system that actually produces the number of teachers we want with the skills we want for the students they're actually going to teach, with a guarantee behind them that says if it's not working, we're going to keep working at it until we get it right, which just doesn't exist anywhere. But this is a big lift. This is, you know, you've got proposals to do this and to do that. This is a very different idea. If you want to consider this, you're going to have to be willing to kind of let go of some stuff and think probably a lot differently. We're going to do this for 10 years, whether you all do it or not. But it'll be so much better if you all join in. It'll be so much better if you put the winds of state policy behind this stuff, if you put your resources behind this. Because what you can imagine what's going to happen if you start saying to the teacher prep programs, you give us this guarantee, you deliver the kind of teachers we want, we'll put the money behind it. By the way, if you're really good, we'll buy more. If you're not so good, we'll buy less. You're going to get a dramatic change in the way we prepare teachers and who gets prepared. And all the talk about where people come from will disappear as everybody scrambles to find the very best candidates to fill the slots we actually have to get the work done that we actually need to do. As you can tell, we're kind of enthusiastic about this. Because it's not because it's about winning the race to the top in Washington. It's about winning the race to the top here. But closing those achievement gaps for our kids and securing a future
that I think the data suggests this is the best tool we've got to secure the future for this state, is to make sure we actually get the student achievement we all pine for and close the achievement gaps we all worry about.
Thank you very much, Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I am just inspired listening to you, Mr. Hutchinson. Thank you so much for your leadership. I am a classroom teacher and have had the benefit of attending four different AP training courses at two different College Board training sites. I really do believe in rigorous pedagogical training. I believe in mastery of content, and I am committed to that as a classroom teacher, and that's what I believe in for all teachers. I do see that in the last few years we've become much better in our schools in having professional learning communities where we're talking about our teaching for the first time, where we're really talking about collaboration and mentoring our newer teachers in our departments, which I think is wonderful. One of the things, though, that my work at the College Board trainings has shown me, and Representative Dietrich and I traveled to Arkansas a couple of years ago, and that state invested $10 million so that they could have College Board training across the state in smaller regions so that more teachers would have access to that rigorous, those rigorous teaching strategies. I am very concerned. I hear about teacher preparation in your conversation here, but we have 70,000 teachers practicing in our classrooms in Minnesota right now. What I think would be really helpful is for us to be talking about regional, rigorous pedagogical training across the state, that we could re-engage people in some of these teaching strategies that would make them more effective in the classroom. I think we have a infrastructure already in place. We have service cooperatives that are set around the state regionally that work with our school districts. I think that we have a delivery opportunity that is available for greater Minnesota. Our teacher preparation colleges are primarily here in the Twin Cities. There's Duluth, there's Mankato. But I would really like for us to be thinking about developing teachers statewide with ongoing teacher training, and particularly in those more rigorous strategies. And the thing I was impressed with in Arkansas, they are training elementary school teachers with AP strategies so that as early as fourth and fifth grade, students are getting those more rigorous learning opportunities. So I'm interested in your comments in regard to that possibility.
Mr. Hutchinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So two things. One, there are 70,000 teachers, and almost no matter what we do, about half of them are going to leave the profession in the next 10 years. So most of my comments obviously were focused on that half. We know from listening to our partners, so the university community, so in Mankato, in St. Cloud, in Winona, in Moorhead, for example, that they actually believe that if they can create this quality teacher preparation program for the new teachers, they are going to become a huge resource for legacy teachers, for existing teachers, because they'll get recognition for the quality of the candidates they're producing, and those ongoing teachers are going to say, wow, I want some of that. I want to have access to that opportunity. In Mankato, for example, they're already creating this dual track, if you will, to do both brilliantly. And I think that's one of the exciting opportunities we have, that if we can crack the nut on delivering really fabulous teachers, I think all teachers are gonna benefit as a consequence of the whole thing's gonna rise.
We have Representative Reinert, Senator Salzman, Representative Peterson. We are gonna stop with legislative discussion and go to testifiers at 22. So we have seven more minutes. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I too am excited about the vision you're proposing, and I've had the opportunity to see it in action at Minnesota State Mankato. Dr. Miller is I would be privileged to call him a friend, a long-term acquaintance, and I'm honored by the work that he's done. So that being said, the devil is in the details, and there's some details here that I really am concerned about, and I think your presentation reflects back on Dr. Sato's and the whole issue. You do depend, you talk about linking student data to teachers and including at least 1 year's growth for students, and you're beginning to make data linkages now, but it's dubious whether we have the appropriate data that will allow us to say whether you have 1 year's growth for students in terms of individual attribution to teachers. And I know that Bush has a long-range objective related to value added, but how that long-range objective is going to relate to the work short-range when you start linking existing data that may not be complete. And then that's part of the question. The second part of the question is the teacher performance assessment out of Stanford and how that relates to the work you're doing and whether you see that as a tool that will undercut the need for some of this linkage.
So we're going to split it up. On the value added, we're investing $4 million right now with the Value Added Research Center at the University of Wisconsin to solve this dilemma with not just with the teachers that are about to come out, but with the teachers we have in our schools today to help figure out the mechanics. How do you take what we've got today, maybe add NWEA in where that's available, and create an assessment capability that will allow us to start reporting this information and digesting it? That what we don't know yet, since we've never done it, is if we got this information, what would it look like and what would it tell us? And that's why we want to get started right away on understanding how to make it work. The infrastructure is not there today, which is why we're making this investment. We believe that the whole state ultimately could benefit from this investment if and when these geniuses from Wisconsin figure it out.
Madam Chair, Representative Beinert, let me just speak briefly to the TPA question, the teacher performance assessment. We've sat down with the Board of Teaching and a number of other representatives from higher education institutions who are very interested in this. Stanford and there's some other, I think it's the National Teacher Program Group. They've identified Minnesota as a state where this performance assessment could be used. And so we've been talking with the Board of Teaching right now, but providing some resources towards that. I think, I don't know exactly what the budget is, but when we last talked, it was around $400,000. We're going to be able to help move the needle on that investment. But I think the important thing to note with the teacher performance assessment, that's a graduation-linked assessment. And it's not an either-or. You need both. I mean, we believe that you need both a value-added instrument assessment, and you also need these other complementary types of assessments in order to identify whether a teacher is effective. Thanks.
Members, good news for some and bad for others. Senator Stump has said that the Senate can stay until 10 after 11. So we now can go with this discussion until quarter two or so, and we do have Senator Salzman, Representative Peterson, Senator Torres Ray, Senator Clark, and Senator Michelle. Senator Salzman.
Here, and thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to cut to the chase here, but I think that this is where this is a carrot as opposed to a stick, because we've been looking at a lot of these pieces as how do we weed out ineffective teachers. This is a significant infusion of resources to make the profession, I mean, to elevate it. So I think that's really important. How can we use these evaluations to not just evaluate teachers and it's performance-based, but how to do an improvement plan? Because when you look at RTI and you look at, you know, progress monitoring, and we're using tests to actually improve instruction, is there a way that we can turn the debate around, you know, spin it a little bit differently so that we can look at these test scores from students to say, how do we take this and now make you a better teacher? How can we use that? Is there a way to turn that around? Because I think that's where we are hitting a roadblock with a profession who sees this as this is all about, making us the scapegoat, you know, when kids don't achieve. So is there a way to use these test scores to, you know, improve?
Mr. Hutchinson.
The short answer is yes. And it's what Misty Sato was saying. It depends on picking assessments that will help you do that as opposed to making it harder. And so between the MCAs and things like NWA, you get more diagnostic information that's going to be helpful to the teacher. But I think the second thing is, which is part of the curriculum in these new teacher preparation programs, is to make evaluation data your friend. Mm-hmm. What we have tended to do, and I'm one of the guilty parties, is to dump data on top of people and say, this is going to help you, and oh, by the way, we're going to beat you up. And it didn't work out so well. So if we can build the use of data and assessment into the curriculum for new teachers, so it's just business as usual for them. It's just normal. So they're not afraid of it. They're not sort of standing back from it, but they're bringing it in and trying to use it to help them improve. I think those two things will get us further down that road.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm truly pleased that you're dealing with the higher ed institutions and the idea of research, because it's fine to do assessments of teachers in the classroom, but they need to know effective practices, they need to know research, and we need to tie what's happening in the classroom to the research, and vice versa. Lots of times teachers, as I go around to the QCOM schools, they are doing reflective practice in teams, and they're learning from all of that, and that ought to be translated back to the university and to other places. And I serve on two things at the university, two groups at the university who are dealing with a translation of research into the classroom. How do we do that more effectively? And I know Representative Mariani even had a bill that talked about developing an institute that dealt with that, because often the research gets stuck at the university, it isn't translated into effective practice, or in the classroom or the school, there's not a professional development person there that can take that, has the time to research that information, take it, and then put it into the regular classroom. When we went to one of the QCOM schools, they had one person that all that person did was take the research and try to help the classroom teachers with the needs that they had by using the latest research, and then talking about did it work, was it, and doing reflective practice with that. And I know Representative Taft has also done some legislation on reflective practice. I think that's a real essential piece, and we can't lose sight of that, because if we just have anybody saying, well, this works, without the kind of data, we will not have the kind of effective teachers that we really need. So I'm delighted with what you're presenting in terms of that type of connection.
Thank you. Let me, Hutchinson. If I might just make it even tighter for you, the way the higher ed institutions are starting to think about this, because of this guarantee, because they're saying we're going to follow those students into the schools and we're going to be there for those first 3 to 5 years, now you have university faculty in K-12 classrooms observing practice and seeing, getting the feedback directly. I said they should do this, they did it, it did work or it didn't work. Now they're on the hook, if you will, for improving what's going on back home. And ultimately, this is going to end up with, I'm going to call them agreements because I don't want to use the word contracts, but really very specific connections between the higher ed institutions who are preparing teachers and the K-12 districts who are receiving them, in which there's much more mutuality of agreement and commitment and obligation between the sender and the receiver in both directions, which we just have not had except in unusual, exceptional circumstances, but this could become the norm across Minnesota.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hutchinson, thank you for all the work and energy that you put into this. A couple of years ago, we met at the Minneapolis Foundation to talk about a program or a model that has been implemented in Minnesota. And I talked to you about how we have invested in the preparation of social workers and how we have some of the best qualified social workers in the field of social work in the country and some of the best supervisors, and how still we cannot really eliminate the gaps that exist in child welfare. And I am curious, after having decided now that you are going to invest $40 million, I want to ask you a couple of questions. One is, could you talk to us a little bit about the evaluation components that you plan to incorporate into this process so that you are able to measure outcomes as they relate to eliminating achievement gaps and controlling for variables outside of teacher preparation, because clearly we, many people in the country are making the argument that to improve achievement gaps, we have to improve other elements of children's lives. And that's what we talk about in social work, that we have a lot of African-American, Latina workers who are the most qualified in the country today because we invest in that. They get scholarships through the University of Minnesota, get master's degrees in social work, but still we have the largest gaps in the country. And then the second question is, have you come to us or are you preparing policy recommendations that will be connected to these specific project that you are engaging in?
Mr. Hutchinson. Mm-hmm.
On the first, the data on effective teaching, as Susan mentioned, is pretty striking. Students that get multiple effective teachers in a row, regardless of where they start from, do well. Gaps get closed. There's some very powerful data out of Dallas, Texas, the city schools in Dallas, that make it very clear that if that the kids furthest behind move the furthest, gaps get closed. It's a very effective teaching works, which I guess we always thought. Now we get to act on it. So there's a great deal of data on the effectiveness of teachers. It's not complete. We don't have everything we would like to know. We don't have every measure we would like to have, but all the data we do have, I think, reinforces the basic notion. So the analysis system that we're establishing is about measuring, at least measuring, the value added of individual teachers with the students they're teaching, looking at all those student attributes, so we're understanding where students were when they started, where they end up, trying to account for the differences that students bring into the classroom, but making no excuses about whether or not teachers can or should be expected to add value to move kids along, regardless of where they come from. We need to add over time, as we said earlier, other parts to this evaluation system so it's more complete. But we think we're building a reasonably robust mechanism to be able to do that. Now, we're all going to see whether it's robust. And again, my plea to you is, come on in. Let's be doing this together. This, just because we started it doesn't mean anything. This is about the kids. And if there's a way for us to be great partners as a whole state, so much the better. And the question of whether we can make or would be willing to make policy recommendations, we're what's called a private foundation, which means we're happy to respond to any question you ask us, but we will never bend your arm about anything. So if there's ways in which we can be helpful, we will be as helpful as we know how to be in response to anything you would ask us to help on. But we can't lobby.
Thank you, Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to put a monkey wrench in your schedule, I do have a question for our testifiers, but I'm a little concerned that we're going to be taking testimony that really is off of solely the governor's proposal as opposed to also the legislative proposal, and we haven't gotten to talk about this. I'm not sure how you want people to address that. I'll put that aside for a second. I'm really glad you both are here. As you said, St. Cloud State is one of your partners, and there are some of us who are on both E12 or in Senate and on higher ed, and clearly we've been talking about how we're really not just seamlessness, but if we're talking about accountability, productivity, if we want to make sure we're getting good evaluations, how do we do better partnering? And so I'm going to piggyback off of the question that Representative Swales had. I think you both are aware that in St. Cloud, part of the reason why ArcticCat brought their building of engines from Japan to Minnesota was because of our great K-12 and higher ed system, but we also know that's limited for the future. And I think part of why we're going to be able to move forward is because President Potter brings his evaluation experience. But when I think about the opportunities we have for incumbent training and building on professional development, I must say I would hate to have us wait until we get a bit further along in the projects you're doing. Senator Saltzman brought up the RTI discussion, and when we were originally talking about that, it seemed that instead of bringing in a plethora of consultants that school districts have to ascertain who is going to have the right tools and expense for them, that because we are investing so much in our higher education system, mostly public but also private, that really looking at how are we better utilizing those, whether it's directly in person in areas like mine, the geographic center, or through teleconferencing, among others. So if you have some ideas as we're moving forward, even with this proposal, about how we can incorporate that, and I think it's fair for us to have expectations of our higher ed system that we're investing so much in, that they work together with our teachers and our schools to be making sure that we're utilizing them to their fullest.
And before we go to the answer, and that'll be your final statement as well, I just will briefly say, I think you were, I don't know if you heard at the beginning, but we, the legislative frame was provided by Representative Mariani and Senator Bonoff, and in your packet, and I did not have it in mine for some reason, so I didn't point it out, but I will point it out now, was the legislative frame for the discussion. We had that first, and then we had the presentation of the governor's bill. And then the three topics here were ones we wanted to hit on, just because we have limited time, were things that we thought the Senate and the House were considering: alternative teacher licensure, and we have different versions, and the value-added growth was, some had concerns about that, but yet that is a part of the governor's proposal. So we were kind of working on that frame. And then the Bush Foundation, you know, kind of tied in with the application. So actually the legislators picked the agenda, not the governor.
And Madam Chair, the only reason why I brought it up is I've gotten three messages while we've been sitting here asking when the legislators' proposal was going to get talked about. So that's the only reason why I brought it up. I obviously am very familiar with what it is.
Yeah, very good. And for anyone who's listening and might be emailing you and others who might want to know, the legislative proposals are encompassed, the House, I will answer for anyway, in our omnibus bill, which we're just waiting for the green light from our House leadership as to when we can unveil it. We've had it ready for a few weeks. We've asked to have it heard next Monday or Tuesday, but we haven't got an answer yet from leadership. But we do have our versions of it, and we've heard them throughout the session in the committee. So this will be the final word to Mr. Hutchinson or Ms. Hegard. Ms. Hegard.
Madam Chair and Senator Clark, just briefly, you know, one of the challenges that we all face, no matter where we work, is how do you focus and make a difference? And so as a foundation, we had to decide, you know, where we wanted to focus. The research told us that focusing on teachers was important. And in order to get the scale and have the impact that we wanted, we decided to focus on teacher preparation programs. That being said, that doesn't mean that we are exclusive. That doesn't mean that it's the only thing that we're going to do, but it'll be our primary area of focus. So, you know, we invite others in. We want a partner where we can leverage and, you know, impact one another. I think that's really important. We're expecting that there'll be some spillover, as Mr. Hutchinson mentioned, with incumbent teachers and in current classrooms right now. But we did have to try to focus our initiative here. So thank you very much for inviting us to be here today. You know, one of the things I just wanted to say is I've spent about 15 years on and off in this room, and it's been a long time since I've seen so many people here. We may disagree about how, but we're here for the same thing, and it's really exciting to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to testifiers now, and my apologies to Senator Clark and Representative Dietrich that we just did not get to all the testifiers. Or questions, if we have time at the end, but I think we're not going to, we would not go back to them. Testifiers, you have up to 2 minutes, absolutely not over, or we won't get to hear from everybody. Mr. Nathan and Mr. Meeks, and I hope no one else uses this, but he does have another engagement, so I'm going to put him, why don't you both come up, and we don't have to wait for people to run up. And it's the PTA. If it was anyone but the PTA, we wouldn't let him head ahead of others, so... and
I
then
know yourself, Madam
you, yes, you do. So, and the next two then are Mr. Kroonquist and Mr. Sellers. Welcome, Mr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Nathan. I have a PhD, and I've worked in public education for 40 years as a public school teacher and administrator. Moving around right now is a piece of paper from the Star Tribune that describes how, over a period of 6 years, using funds from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we were able to eliminate the graduation gap between white and African-American youngsters in Cincinnati, in the Cincinnati public schools. It was a comprehensive approach employing many of the things that you've heard about today, including financial rewards for schools that made progress, intensive in-service, collaboration, community schools, and a number of other things. But I hope that the fact that we have been able to succeed at doing this, not just talking about it, not just writing articles, but actually doing it, will give some weight to the comments that I'm going to make in the next 90 seconds. I have five specific suggestions. First, Minnesota has a value added, an advantage over other states, in that the legislature wisely last year adopted site-governed schools. We have not yet funded some startup funds for that. I'd encourage that the legislature decide to shift some of the funding for startup for charter public schools and the startup funding for site-governed schools, the Minneapolis and St. Paul teacher unions, plus a number of teacher union leaders in this room have strongly endorsed the site-governed approach. It seems to me that we ought to make some funds available right now without waiting for federal funds. Secondly, on the alternative route, the St. Paul Federation of Teachers has provided what I think is a groundbreaking effort to create new kinds of public school teachers in areas that are not that are shortages, like special ed, like students who don't speak English in the home, and so on. And I think that that ought to be an important alternative route. And frankly, I think it's an alternative route that could build on an existing law that allows the commissioner to create to identify outstanding district or charter public schools and put the focus of teacher preparation in those outstanding district public schools. That was a little-known law that was created 10 years ago. It is still on the books, and I think the Federation of Teachers deserves merit and attention for the proposal that they have, and I hope that the committees and the department will be talking with them. I know that some of their ideas were incorporated into the original proposal. I hope they're incorporated into the second. Third, I think that the Teach for America approach is another high-quality option. There isn't time to go through the research, but I salute Senator Bonhoff and her colleagues for the work that they have done on this. When the legislature discussed the teaching of reading last year, led by Senator Olson and Senator Salzman and others, there was considerable discussion about how some of the best wisdom about how do we improve public education is in the schools themselves, with classroom teachers themselves, and that sometimes colleges and universities have things to learn from people who are doing outstanding things in the schools. And the legislature, in its wisdom, and I do mean this sincerely, has pulled together over the last several years meetings between the universities and district teachers in areas like math and science. I think that that ought to continue. We've pulled together some of the same kind of thing. That ought to be a part of this. Two last points. You heard a lot about the challenges of teacher assessment. I agree that there are challenges. The federal government is using $350 million of our tax money to award grants to create new forms of teacher assessment, which include but go beyond standardized tests. As a former classroom teacher, as a person married to a public school teacher in this city for more than 30 years, as a parent of another youngster who is teaching math in the city, I completely agree about the assessment. And one last sentence, having said that, I think that these things are doable and that Minnesota urgently needs to adopt the kinds of recommendations that are included here, including allowing outstanding alternative schools, such as the High School for Recording Arts, created by a young man who himself was close to being a dropout. We need to allow those people to continue and see those folks as part of the solution rather than as schools to be taken over.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, Commissioner, members of the committee, and I believe honorary Senate House Member Dewar, Tom, I think this means I can't buy you breakfast anymore. I think it's now against the law. So, I'm Bob Meeks. I'm on the staff of the School Board Association. Let me get you back on schedule here a little bit. We support going through now. We support the original proposal. We support going forward. There's a number of reasons. We don't have to get into all of them, but, you know, we do very well in most of our grades and most of our schools, do very well. But we got one heck of an achievement gap. And we've got to try something different. And Senator Stump and Representative Dabney laid out a number of great issues. But the problem is you don't have any money. And you're not going to have any money, it doesn't look like, for about 4 or 5 years. So the only game in town right now if we want to try something different is this. So we're asking you to be bold, go forward, give those school boards, those administrators, those teachers, those citizens, and most importantly, those kids, the opportunity to try this. If you don't go forward, it's done. If you go forward, those groups have to come together, and if they don't want to do it, they won't. But in some districts, they're ready. You've seen that. You've seen them come forward. That's all I'm asking. Give those districts the chance to try this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and greet the PTA. Mr. Kroonquist and Mr. Sellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Let me just start by saying that we also supported the first grant application and continue to support this effort and hope that we can pull together a solid application and hope it's successful. I'd like to just focus on two turnaround strategies that we think might be helpful and make the application even stronger. Number one is greatly ramping up our extended time programming. Representative Dabney referred to it. It's an area where we really need to improve, whether you're talking about extended day, extended week, but mostly extended year and focusing on summer school. Many of you are familiar with a nationally renowned study by Johns Hopkins University in the Baltimore Public Schools showed that two-thirds of their achievement gap was directly attributable to summer learning loss. In fact, the study showed that the school was narrowing the achievement gap, but then when summer hit, not only did the gap bounce back, it bounced back even wider. So we think that's a clear turnaround strategy that should be included. The second one is the whole community schools concept. And I see Superintendent Lester and Brian Bass, the principal from Brooklyn Center here. They can be far more helpful to you on this, and I'm sure they'd love to talk to you. But this is based on the whole Harlem Children's Zone concept, co-locating services, the comprehensive approach, making sure you're addressing the social and health the needs of the student and the family as well. So those are the two issues we'd love to see included in a second application. Again, we support the effort. And just in closing, I think it's important, though, that we also acknowledge that a one-time federal grant, even if it includes these important reform initiatives, is not a replacement for an adequate, sustainable, and equitable education funding system. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sellers and Mr. Olson could come up, please.
Madam Chair, members, Daniel Sellers, Executive Director of Teach for America in the Twin Cities. One of Teach for America's core values is relentless pursuit of results. I will relentlessly pursue finishing this in 2 minutes. Three things here very quickly. The first is we're talking about race to the top. I just want to be clear that alternative certification and allowing a platform for Teach for America to exist here strengthens our race to the top application in three ways. The first is most obvious. It's one example of an alternative certification program. There's some confusion that exists out there that the current laws are a sustainable platform. I want to be clear that that's not true. One-year waivers from the Board of Teaching for an organization that asks core members to commit for 2 years at least in the classroom is not a sustainable way to run our organization. Secondly, to strengthen alternative certification, we couldn't agree more with folks like Dr. Sato and the Bush Foundation around evaluating teachers and their effectiveness, recruiting the best and the brightest. We do a phenomenal job of that, training them using best practices, which Representative Peterson talked about, and then supporting them and mentoring them ongoing so that even when they're finished with our training program, we don't just send them out into the classroom on their own. We continue to support them ongoing. And, of course, as Representative Ward mentioned, we do student teaching. Secondly, Race to the Top application asks for distribution of high-quality teachers into low-income communities. Teach for America specifically places in low-income communities and minority communities most affected by the achievement gap. And, of course, it should be noted districts voluntarily choose to participate with programs like Teach for America. Nobody's forcing districts to take the teachers. They see this strategy as one part of their strategic implementation to close the achievement gap. And this is part of a broader solution. Finally, the third piece, Race to the Top application is looking for teacher prep programs that work. And honestly, it shocks me that there's so much disagreement about this program. All of the good, rigorous, methodologically strong studies that have been done show that Teach for America teachers are effective in the classroom. Lots of times studies are cited that were ineffective, that are not rigorous studies, and the strong studies show our teachers do a phenomenal job in the classroom. Senator Stump, Mr. Chair, you mentioned that external factors contribute to this gap. I couldn't agree more, but we have too many examples of strong teachers across this country, myself included, who have overcome those barriers despite coming through alternative preparation programs that lead their students to phenomenal academic gains to pass up on this opportunity we have before us today. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Ms. Vargas, if you could come forward, and Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is David Olson. I'm President of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity. I will move quickly. I agree with Senator Stump. I wish we were actually doing this in March instead of April, but that is what it is. From the Minnesota Chamber's perspective, Race to the Top is more or less an RFP on education reform in Minnesota. Based on the review, it's more or less an RFP on education reform in Minnesota. Based on the review of the Obama administration, we have some work to do, both on the RFP and our education system. Minnesota seems to be resting on the laurels of our long tradition of excellence in education, and in the meantime, avoiding the uncomfortable conversation about the unacceptable and persistent achievement gaps between student groups. Why does the business community care? Selfishly, because these students are our future workforce, and if the demographers are right, we need every one of them ready to work. The Obama administration has made it perfectly clear. As a state, we either respond with passing the necessary reforms
or we do not have a second chance at this grant. The troubling issue at this point is that if we do not meet the requirements of this grant, it puts the children and the future of this state in jeopardy. 28% of the applications is in the great teachers and leaders section. One of the components within that portion of the application includes providing high-quality pathways for aspiring teachers and principals. We finished 29th in that category. That needs work. I was going to talk to you about the $400 million that Tennessee got, but just I'm going to pass on that and just finish with saying, as Secretary Duncan said while announcing the 16 finalists for round one, winning will require excellence. Now we head into round two. We ask you to be bold and excellent in passing alternative routes to teacher certification to not only strengthen our application, but to strengthen our school system. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If Mr. Forsberg could come forward, and Ms. Vargas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. I'm Sandy Vargas. I'm the President and CEO of the Minneapolis Foundation, and we have been heavily involved in transforming education, especially with the Minneapolis District. I want to say a couple of things about the foundation. We're interested in transformation of education because we're interested in moving forward the economic, social, and racial equity in this community. And I think that is a very important goal as we think about Race to the Top. There is no reason other than some of the institutional activity that we have and some of us not moving the whole idea of transformation forward as strongly as we might. And so there's no reason to have the kind of achievement gap that we've got in this community. It's up to us to change that, and I will tell you that that's something that we are, as the Minneapolis Foundation, and also as a Latina, that we need to really, really start working on immediately. The three things that I'd like to just say, and I will be very quick about this, is that I'm urging you to pass the alternative teacher licensure legislation. I'm also urging you to put in more accountability in the legislation that gives teachers and principals the kind of evaluation and feedback that they need in order to do a good job. And third, to give the commissioner, the education commissioner, authority to intervene in low-achieving schools. I won't say too much more. All I will say is this picture has to have our children at the center of the discussion, our children and our families. And this morning, as I was thinking about what I might say in front of you, I put on a little pin that's called a milagro, and that means miracle. And what we need in Minnesota right now to get this done is to move Race to the Top. We need a miracle of all of us working together, getting through an agreement to get this done and to win those public dollars to really jumpstart our transformation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If Mr. Maves could come forward. After Mr. Forsberg, we are going to hear from President Dewar, and then the House will stay for the last three testifiers, but the Senate is already in session at 11 o'clock, so they absolutely have to leave very shortly. Mr. Forsberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As many of you know, United Way is working in partnership with the Minneapolis Foundation and a number of other philanthropic organizations, so I want to fully support the remarks of my colleague and make my remarks simple. United Way and the board of directors there are very committed to making long-term impact in our community around issues of poverty, creating pathways out of poverty, and when we think about this issue, we are committed to the long-term investment of transforming the young children in our community. The topic you have before you today is a very powerful one. It's one that we're committed to, and it starts for us with an investment in early learning, in literacy at third grade, and then moving into these more complex issues about how do we make transformation in our education system. There's no question that as I work with nonprofits and low-income families that the status quo for them is unacceptable today. You know that. That's why you're here to discuss these very difficult issues. I know they're difficult. I support you in the rich discourse. Thank you for taking on this topic.
Thank you very much. And President Dewar will be part of the team tomorrow, and we take all this great input and try to put it in a small group into something written down with the Department of Education. But for everyone who's here, President Dewar would like to make some remarks now.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. It's been hard to sit here for almost 3 hours and not talk being in this room with a microphone, but I want to be just very clear that we need to close Minnesota's achievement gap. We've got to focus on kids, and we have to focus on research-proven methods that are going to help do that. We also have to distinguish between three things: meaningful change that will get things better, harmful change that will set us back, and meaningless change that will make people feel good but not help students learn. We already know what works in Minnesota. We've got some of the highest graduation rates, teacher quality measures, college entrance scores, overall student achievement. But we need to focus our resources on closing this achievement gap and making sure that it works. Innovation happens every day. The strength of Minnesota's education system are the outstanding teachers. We need to continue to improve on that. We need to make sure that the teachers come up with, and happens every day, the innovation that's happening in our classroom. We need to work together and create an environment where teachers, community, parents, students, administrators, policymakers have this successful environment where we can have all of our students achieve to their highest ability. If we can focus on this and focus on Minnesota solutions for Minnesota challenges, Nashville is not Nashwalk, and so we've got to focus on what works here in Minnesota and how we're going to close this achievement gap. And we have a proposal, which I want to quickly mention with Senator Torres Rey and Representative Carlos Mariani, that looks at all of these pieces that we've been talking about, getting parents involved, the community involved, developing and attracting teachers of color with a student repayment program, continuous staff development, and extending the day or the school year so that we can meet the challenges of our students in the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that proposal is an introduced bill that people can look at. Do we know the number of that for the viewing audience, Representative Mariani or Senator Torres Rey, or not? Maybe not. Okay, never mind. All right. Thank you very much. And I know the Senate has to leave, so we appreciate your input, and we look forward to working with you. And if Ms. Dr. Ephraim could come up as well, and then we also have Roger Arnson. So as soon as the senators depart, we will. I'll call on Dr. Maves. All right, Dr. Maves.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ralph Mays, and I'm a retired licensed psychologist and retired
school psychologist. Excuse me, Dr. Mays. If I could ask people to take their conversations in the hallway, because the meeting is still, we still have some testifiers. Thank you. Okay, sorry, Dr. Mays.
My name is Ralph Mays, and I'm a retired school psychologist and retired licensed psychologist. First thing I'd like to say is the first thing I would do if I had the power to do it would be to get rid of the term race to the top. I don't think education is a race, and I don't think it should be a race. And I would suggest the term journey toward excellence rather than race to the top. So you might pass that on to the people you talk with tomorrow from the Department of Education. I think the term itself, race to the top, speaks volumes about the shortcomings that are in the Obama administration's school reform efforts. Recently, while I was traveling, I read the USA Today newspaper, and there was an article about race to the top. Some people in there were quoted as feeling it was the best thing to come along since ice cream. However, the concluding paragraph said the following, quote, "But the reforms aren't slam dunks," said Tom Lovelace, a Brookings Institution researcher who found earlier this month that school turnarounds can be done, but the odds are daunting. He examined 1,156 California schools over a 20-year period and calculated the odds of a poorly performing school rising to the top in 20 years were about 1 in 70. The findings, he says, suggest that people who say we know how to make failing schools into successful ones but merely lack the will to do so are selling snake oil. I worked for 35 years in one of the most outstanding school districts in the state of Minnesota. In 1964, when I came to that school district and for a number of years thereafter, the director of testing and I used to sit down in the spring and look at the group test scores for the various schools. Each year, the same schools were at the top and the same schools were at the bottom. A couple years ago, I looked at the newspaper to see how those schools were performing and my district was performing in terms of the recent testing, and I saw the same pattern. Except for a few variations because of closing and opening the schools, the same schools were at the top and the same schools were at the bottom. I do know from personal experience that the staff in those schools, both the teachers and the principals, were outstanding in both the low-performing schools and the high-performing schools. I think it tells you that these issues about school reform are complex. There was an outstanding article last Saturday in the Star Tribune that I hope you read, and if you haven't, I would take a look at it. It was by Steve Chapman, a syndicated columnist. The title of the article was, "We Have a Lot to Learn About School Reform." The subtitle was, "A One-Size-Fits-All Isn't Likely to Improve Overall Student Performance." He continues, what we should learn from these experiences. First, that nothing works, but that few, if any, remedies work consistently in different places with different populations. We should expect that broad, one-size-fits-all changes imposed by the federal government, such as those offered by the Obama administration, will not pay off in student performance gains. And I would add, the same could apply to the previous Bush administration. He concludes by saying, from the local school district to the Federal Department of Education, humility, caution, and open-mindedness are in order. Because right now, the main thing we know about improving schools is we don't know very much. I would repeat that. Because right now, the main thing we know about improving schools is that we don't know very much. I am puzzled and perplexed regarding Minnesota's rush to race to the top. Have we learned nothing from No Child Left Behind? It seems to me both Democrats and Republicans here at the Capitol were calling not too long ago for withdrawal from the federal program called No Child Left Behind, not just once, but numerous times, and rightly so. Why don't we come forth with our own Minnesota approach and call it Journey Toward Excellence, set forth a model for educating all students well. And in our work in Minnesota, let us remember the words of Mr. Chapman to be cautious, humble, and open-minded. What a place to begin. And finally, I would propose the following. The governor, Mr. McClung, the commissioner of education, and her assistant commissioners, each legislator, each member of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and the Minnesota Business Partnership, the editorial boards of the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press, and each education lobbyist here at the Capitol, would commit for 1 year to give 2 hours per week tutoring students struggling to learn. Time would be spent at the elementary, middle school, and high school levels, and at least one-third of the time would be spent with students at the low end of the achievement gap. These experiences should accomplish at least two things. First, it would hopefully help a number of students who are currently struggling to learn. And second, one would hope it would help a number of adults in the state of Minnesota who are key education players become more knowledgeable and insightful regarding students struggling to learn and become college and career ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And Roger Aronson, you can come down. And before I call on Dr. Ephraim, for the viewing audience who was interested in the legislative frame, Representative Mariani's bill is House File 3706. The Senate file, Senator Torres Ray, is 3288. And then passed out here today but not yet introduced is a bill that was worked on by legislators that also provides some of the legislative frame. Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch. We opposed Race to the Top the first time around. We continue to oppose Race to the Top mainly because it is not focusing on what really works, and that is actually outside of the realm of education. Dr. William Janes from the University of California at Santa Barbara has done research and found that the achievement gap is not just reduced, it is not just improved, it is eliminated in students, minority students of two-parent families who have religious involvement. That is not something that the schools can do. That is not something that the legislature can do other than to not tax families into oblivion and and to make fathers relevant in welfare reform discussions. But 45 years of federal involvement in education has done nothing to improve the achievement gap. Nothing. And now, as Dr. Maves pointed out, we are going to, as a state, take on something that is more onerous than No Child Left Behind, which we have on a bipartisan basis and across many different philosophical and political spectra opposed. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. In addition, there's the cost to implement in a $1.4 trillion federal deficit and a upcoming $6 billion state deficit. We are jumping through all of these hoops to potentially have to spend more money than we have to implement things that may well not work. And even the U.S. Department of Education in the final rule on Race to the Top from last December said, quote, "We believe that the use of evidence-based practices is critical to the success of Race to the Top program. However, we acknowledge that the research evidence to support education practices, strategies, and programs may not reach the same threshold for each reform." The four education reform areas in the ARRA, or Race to the Top, are in large part focused on giving educators new database tools for developing and implementing their own best practices. So they're trying stuff that they still don't even know will work. The biggest concern that we have beyond all of this talk about teacher preparation and value added and all of those things continues to be the Common Core standards. And we are very distressed to see that Section 1 of the governor's proposal gives the department expedited rulemaking authority to adopt these standards with no public hearing, with no input, especially after everything that we have been through with the profile of learning, and then that would essentially ignore all of the input that you have had from the nation-leading developers of the math standards in this state and commenters on both the math and English standards from all over the country, that these standards are horrible. And you would actually be setting Minnesota students back. And that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Thank you very much. And you can see that since Commissioner Segrin has left, the Senate has left, and the House doesn't have session, we're being more indulgent with the last testifiers because they didn't get to have everybody listen to them. So thank you, Dr. Ephraim. And Mr. Aronson, you are the final testifier.
Madam Chair, members, more indulgent. That's a marvelous concept, and one might want to take advantage of that. But I'm not going to, and I'll keep my remarks short. And I frankly, Madam Chair, I think you are owed some accolades for the manner in which you've conducted this hearing and getting all of this information here and keeping the group on schedule. It takes an experienced and directed chair in order to do that. You've done a nice job, and I appreciate you giving me a bit of time on the end here to talk about my clients. I have 1,700 school principals, the Elementary and the Secondary Principal Associations throughout Minnesota. That's the principals and assistant principals. Sometimes people don't know that that's where that is. And the word principal appeared several times in yesterday's press conference with the governor. It appears several times in the bill here. It's been heard a lot of times from the table here today. When I visited with the staff yesterday, I said one of the things I wanted to convey to the committee today was we signed on to the original Race to the Top grant, and that didn't go through. But then the turnaround school grants came. And these are being implemented now, and we've met with the department about those. The Senate had a hearing on those. The federal government is misery to deal with. They're miserable. We have some very good principals who were newly placed in schools 3 years ago in Minneapolis, who the teachers like, who the district likes, who the parents like, who the feds are mandating that we remove. Principal at Esten High School, Carla Steindeck. Principal at Lucy Laney School. David Branch, the principal in Brooklyn Center, who was here earlier today, and there are others as well. When what we've got now is this race to reform to chase some dollars, and it is a bad way to make these decisions. A lot of these reforms are well-intended. You've heard an awful lot of good ideas, but we can't access federal legislators in the same way we access you. We can't access Arne Duncan in the same way we access Alice Segrin. And frankly, there's a lot of these decisions that are best made locally, notwithstanding the statewide initiatives that we've had. But we're deeply concerned about that in the principal level as to what is this going to do. And there was a very nice comment earlier on in the testimony today of we want to strengthen the principalship. We want to strengthen teaching in Minnesota. That really is an excellent goal.
A key part of that is resources. You all know that. I mean, last year when we talked about the bullying bill, we said we need more counselors. We need more psychologists. We need more assistant principals. We need to do things to reduce class size. We need to do things, you know, basically to do early childhood, all-day kindergarten. And, Madam Chair, the word miracle was said by one of the previous testifiers, and we all see that gleam that comes in your eye every time that word is used. It's unfortunate that that's not where we are. And let me conclude with this. As I understand it, and I might be wrong, and the financial people know more about this than I do, but it's $175 million. And it's $175 million over 4 years. So it's $40 million a year. And in terms of what the department takes out of that, because a lot of this is used, and you know what other things we're doing this, one has to question, what are we getting for this, and long term, what are we doing to ourselves for doing this? So those are some of the concerns my clients have, and the school principals, and we'll keep working at it. Someday we'll get that chair next to you up there, too, you know.
And thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Dr. Aronson, if you had said that you were going to plug the new Minnesota miracle, you would have gotten in while the Senate was still here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And on that note, members, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.